Second.
Roll call, please.
Who was the second?
George.
Board Member Luna?
Yes.
Board Member Clay?
Yes.
Board Member Brendler?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Bayrou?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We now have a community forum for anyone to speak to the Redevelopment Agency on any topic not on the agenda. Seeing none, we will close the community forum portion and any board announcements or reports. Seeing none, I requested that we reconsider the traffic way park improvements approved on March 13th, 2007. I need to step down as a conflict of interest as I own property in the vicinity. So I will turn this over to Board Vice Chair Ellen Bayrou.
Thank you, Board Member O'Malley. And we'll wait for him to clear the room. And from what I understand, we need to redo the vote. Is that correct?
Do a motion or?
I'll entertain a motion.
I move that the agency authorize the Administrative Services Director to appropriate $183,500 of Redevelopment Agency funds to frontage improvements along the south side of Traffic Way from Omeda to the eastern boundary of Traffic Way Park.
Motion by
second.
Board Member Luna and seconded by Board Member Clay.
Discussion.
Discussion.
Do we need to refer to this as Colony Park since we've renamed that?
Yes, thank you. Amend the motion to be the eastern boundary of Colony Park.
Park.
Okay, let's roll call.
Board Member Luna?
Yes.
Board Member Clay?
Yes.
Board Member Brendler?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Bayrou?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the consent calendar, and we'll ask Board Member O'Malley to come back in. And on our consent calendar, there's one item, the Community Redevelopment Agency minutes of March 13th.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Roll call.
Board Member Luna?
Yes.
Board Member Brendler?
Yes.
Board Member Clay?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Bayrou?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
And I'll give it back to the chair.
Thank you. Do we have an executive director report?
No report.
Thank you. Then we will adjourn to closed session. Mayor, would you like to?
Yeah, we're discussing three items on the closed session, and we will adjourn to closed session. So I apologize for our tardiness, but we were in closed session. Welcome to this Tuesday, April 10th meeting of the Atascadero City Council. There are agendas in the back of the room. Agendas and staff reports are available at atascadero.org. This is being broadcast on KPRL, AM 1230. It's also being broadcast on cable channel 21 and on slowspan.org. May I have a report on closed session, please?
Thank you. The council did meet on closed session, as indicated on the agenda on the first two items. They did give further direction to the labor negotiator and also to the real property negotiator. And we continue to item C.
Okay, next item is Pledge of Allegiance with Councilmember O'Malley leading us.
Thank you. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
We have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Here.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Here.
And Mayor Luna.
Here.
All present.
Next item on the agenda is community forum. This time is set aside for those in the public who want to speak on an item that is not on the agenda. I ask that you direct your comments to the entire council, not to individual council members. Do not use slanderous, profane, or negative personal remarks concerning individuals present or absent. And to the audience, I ask that you be respectful and courteous to the speakers and refrain from vocal expressions of approval like clapping and heckling. With that, we'll begin.
Mr. Mayor and council staff, my name's Tom Gaddis. I'm a 31-year resident, 31 years resident here in Atascadero, and I'm one of the leaders of the Atascadero pastors. And it's my privilege tonight to introduce to you one of the newest pastors in our community. This is Varnum Schultz. Comes to us by way of New Delhi, New York, and I'll get it right. And he's the pastor of the Atascadero First Baptist Church, and I asked him to come and pray for tonight's proceedings.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Schultz, Pastor Schultz.
I've only been here for 7 months. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for allowing us to be here tonight. And Father, we pray for wisdom and guidance as we deal with issues concerning our city, and bless that we get to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. If you would state your name and the city you're from.
Okay. I filled out a speaker card. So, Greg Barber, 7720 Valley, and I'm speaking on a subject, objection to city policy, administrative use for process.
You need to speak in the microphone.
Like I said, I've got an objection to the administrative use permit process. I got a notice in the mail about, I don't know if you want the details of the notice, I just have questions on the process. And first question is, and I don't know if you can answer these questions, so I'm just a confused property owner,
okay,
to be honest with you.
We'll do our best.
I wouldn't want my neighbor to have the right to oppose my project that's stated on this permit or on this City of Atascadero notice of administrative use hearing. So I'm confused, a little bit confused, so maybe you can enlighten me. First question is the community development director a sworn officer of the government?
No.
Okay. What oath did he take?
Marcia could answer that.
No, I think, Wade, do you want to answer some? I'm not sure what this is about. But
well, it's about my rights.
Why don't you list your questions and we'll try to.
Okay, that was two. And based on if he took an oath, is he sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States as our elected officials? And how is his position filled? My point is, I think he has too much power. So those are my four questions.
You want to quickly?
Sure. The community development director is an appointed position. He did take an oath to uphold the laws of the city, state, and nation, including the Constitution. He does hold the administrative use hearings, and those could be appealed to the Planning Commission.
Yeah, Councilmember O'Malley has a question.
Okay. It would help me if you could maybe read what the notice is about. We're not sure what the topic is.
Okay, I'll read the notice.
Maybe not all of it, just the heading of what's the topic would help us.
The project description? Is that what you want to hear?
Or what's the location?
Well, you're a neighbor that was noticed because you're within 300 feet or 600 feet.
No, I'm 1.9 miles from this house. But I think the property may touch my back property. So, you know, I never see that house unless my dog's lost. And it's a cul-de-sac dead end. And I you know, I'm bothered that I get this notice. And I'm given a right to oppose a project, and I don't feel I have that right.
State law.
Because of the project scope. It's encroaching on the front setback. And if you understand the property location, it's on a ridge line. It's Junipero. If anybody's familiar with that street, it's a very narrow street, and you have to drive maybe 10 miles an hour. And so I guess the lot that Mr. Messer is proposing, it's the hillside just drops off from the road, so he's got to build a house up, you know, with a humongous, I imagine, basement or whatever, just to get, you know, some structure so it has access to the road. And my point is it's the setbacks, I believe, are for safety and privacy. And I don't understand why I'm being noticed, because it doesn't bother me. I'm not affected. I'm not his immediate neighbor on his side or in his front. So the privacy isn't an issue, because he's going away from my property. And now, so I'm confused why I'm being bothered by this paperwork, this administrative paperwork, where it's another indication of our lack of common sense. And whether it's in our policy or what, it's just not good use of our time and money. Because I know this process isn't cheap, and it's costing us money. It's costing me time. Because I'm down here to defend my property rights. Because I don't want this neighbor to tell me what I can do with my property when it has to do with setbacks of this nature, when it's where I feel it's the setbacks are for privacy and safety. So I don't plan on going to this hearing, because I don't think I have the right. So you answered my questions. Well, and it's nice to know that he is the deputy director or the director of community development. He's sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States, because I think this is a very sensitive issue, and that is an incredibly powerful position. And in my opinion, it should be an elected position. That's my piece. So, because it's such a powerful position. And it's arbitrary. I don't know what the criteria is to send out this notice. And I got 20 seconds. The criteria, I feel, is not specific, and it's arbitrary. Because why am I being bothered with this? And, you know, there's like 200 houses in this vicinity. So, you know, 40 cents times 200, it adds up. So, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate that you don't want to...
And have done a little research on my own into the setback proposal and the need for it to be brought back after it was allowed to sunset. I have not seen or heard about any problems, save the corner of the city hall that's sinking, that would cause a rush to reinstitute this ordinance. I have talked to a lot of neighbors to see if they have been having problems with the creek meandering or undermining their property, and I've not heard one complaint. It would be interesting to know exactly what the findings of EcoSlow's study on damage or harm to the creeks were in 2002. I assume that they did spend some money and do a study so that it was more than just a supposition that there was harm to the creek. Or is this a case where EcoSlow justified pursuing a lawsuit merely because there are people close to the creek and that humans do harm, ergo the creek is harmed? I would really be interested in hearing what the lawsuit was specifically based on. We also have no real answer for the exact reason for a 35-foot setback. It seems kind of random, like kind of a random thing to say that it is in the middle of 20 and 50 feet. I believe there should be some empirical data to support a mandatory distance being picked for this ordinance, not an arbitrary number between two distances. Did EcoSlow pick a number, or is there a specific number specified in the CEQA? This is, I believe, an important point. Before imposing a mandatory new setback, perhaps the creek should be cleaned out to actually see how the water flows naturally. Trees that have died and fallen will obviously tend to dam the water flow and send it in a different direction. If shrubbery gets pulled down into the creek and becomes pushed against the fallen trees, perhaps the flow would be diverted to a point where the creek banks would be undermined. When I was patrolling the creek adjacent to the junior high school, when my daughter was in junior high school and we were looking for kids in the creek drinking beer and smoking pot, there was places it was almost impossible to get through. It seems that determined students could go almost anywhere, but us older folks had a little more trouble getting there. In a really large rainstorm, it would be easy to see how all of that would become tangled and become an unpredictable dam. This is a lot more likely cause of the creek banks being undermined than, or is having a home and a drive that's 20 feet away from it more of a cause. I have serious doubts as to the soundness of EcoSlow's decision to sue. And if their reasoning is not sound, then the reasons for further creek setbacks is surely in question. I ask that the City Council and the staff get answers to these questions rather than just reacting to EcoSlow's overt call to action. An ordinance that affects the value and use of citizens' property demand the most careful study and thought before it's enacted. Thank you.
Thank you. That hearing will be, I believe, May the 8th.
Oh, May the 8th.
The creek setback will be May 8th.
May 8th. Next speaker, please.
Hi. Mayor Luna and council people, thank you so much. My name is Jolene Horn. I live at 3650 Falda Avenue in Itasca. Because of the zoning, we could add a duplex to this parcel. At that time, no one at the city mentioned anything to us about a possible 35-foot creek setback or any setback. Anyway, we were satisfied that the future value that we could derive from this parcel would be a benefit to us in creating retirement income, so we went ahead with the purchase. For what it's worth, we are not wealthy people. We worked and continue to work for every single dollar of that down payment, and there's no positive cash flow. Again, this was purely for investment for future retirement income. About a month ago, we considered refinancing our property, and we did get an appraisal done by Stan McDonald's office. That was exactly the time that we became aware of the proposed 35-foot creek setback ordinance. So we attended the Planning Commission meeting on April 3rd, and my husband posed our situation and our concern about how this proposed ordinance would affect the value of our property and specifically how it would affect the zoning. Our concern about zoning was not addressed by the Planning Commission or staff. In preparation for, okay, I thought it was April 24th, but apparently it's May 8th. In preparation for that May 8th City Council meeting, I called our appraiser and I asked him how much it would cost for him to prepare a second appraisal on the same property as if the 35-foot setback ordinance was in place. I also asked if he or someone from his office would come to the May 8th meeting to present an objective assessment of affected real estate values to the City Council. I told him that at the Planning Commission meeting last week. The planning commissioners were told that this setback would not affect real property values. The appraiser's immediate reaction was that such an ordinance would severely and negatively impact the value of those affected properties. Our appraiser wanted to speak to the other appraisers in his office. He called me a few hours later and said that it would cost many thousands of dollars to prepare such an appraisal and that it could not be completed in time for the city council meeting. He suggested that we call Schenberger and Taylor in San Luis Obispo. We did that, and we were told that to prepare such an appraisal, they wouldn't be able to prepare something until the end of May. On our property, one of the houses, we have two houses, one of the houses sits entirely on this 35-foot setback area, and then the line would go through the middle of the second house. If the ordinance goes through, and when the time comes for us to sell, we, of course, would have to disclose to the buyer that the two homes are legal, non-conforming. I can tell you, pardon me, I can tell you that the legal non-conforming status drastically reduces the value of this property. Why would a buyer buy a property where if a home burns down, it cannot be replaced in the same spot? City staff says the house can be rebuilt further toward the street, but there's only so much room on a given piece of property. Also, to rebuild the house on another site would require a whole new permit, not just a replacement permit. And we bought this property because there's room to build a duplex. If either of the existing homes had to be built elsewhere on the property, it does not change the current zoning. Okay, I've got to hurry up. After much research, we've lived here for 20 years, raised our kids, worked hard. After much research, my opinion is that we would lose 20 to 25% of the current value of our property.
Hi, my name is Mark Phillips. I'm from Atascadero, and I'd like to play this short DVD, so can we switch over to my computer?
The watchdogs. A former worker at Walmart is claiming the retail giant is running a sophisticated surveillance operation that targets employees, journalists, stockholders, and critics. Bruce Gabbard was fired last month for intercepting and recording phone calls to and from a New York Times reporter. Gabbard told the Wall Street Journal he was part of a broader surveillance operation run out of Walmart's Arkansas headquarters. Employees reportedly nicknamed their work area the Batcave. Gabbard also revealed Walmart infiltrated the group up against the wall last year by sending a long-haired employee wearing a wireless microphone to one of the group's meetings. A Walmart surveillance van was stationed outside the meeting in order to listen in to what was happening. Walmart also reportedly closely monitored the internet and phone usage of employees at work. Managers receive a list of email addresses and phone numbers with which their employees have communicated, and a list of websites visited. Walmart also developed a system to read the personal emails of workers sent or received from private accounts such as Hotmail or Gmail. After the Wall Street Journal story ran, Walmart issued an apology, but only to shareholders that were monitored under the surveillance operation. We're joined by one of the two reporters who broke the story. Gary McWilliams is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He joins us from a studio in Houston. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Gary.
Good morning, Amy.
Well, why don't you lay out the story first? How did you discover what Walmart was doing?
Well, it was about 5 weeks ago the company announced it had fired a technician for recording conversations with a New York Times reporter and with recording pager messages sent over its internal network. We started looking into it then, and what we found was a very sophisticated, very extensive operation run by former FBI agents, headed by a former CIA agent in his Bentonville headquarters. Mr. Gabbard spoke with us, described the operation in quite detail, and helped draw a picture, really, of a company that had an executive security program, global security, threat protection, information security, quite extensive operation.
Talk about the man who became the whistleblower.
You know, Mr. Gabbard is a former Marine. He was a reserve deputy sheriff in Benton County outside of that encompasses Bentonville.
The well-known multinational company McKinsey, where does it play in here?
Well, at one point, you know, one of these embarrassing memos that Walmart felt had been leaked from internally, McKinsey had helped work on that memo. It was their Susan Chambers healthcare memo, if you recall it. Subsequent to
Explain what the Susan Chambers memo was.
It was an internal document sent to the board of directors proposing ways to reduce their health care costs. Among those, you know, was requiring employees to do more physical chores, to essentially was sanctioned by higher ups. And in fact, he was pressured into stopping those leaks by higher ups in the company.
That story on Walmart's.
Could you give your name, Mark?
I did. Mark Phillips from Atascadero. That story goes on for a half an hour. It was half of their show last Friday. For those of you who don't know, that's Amy Goodman, and that show is Democracy Now! It can be heard every day at noon at KCBX as well as other places. Of course, no one locally carried this story. I asked the Tribune why they didn't get back to me. I don't expect that they will. This story is just another in a litany of reasons why many of us who believe that Atascadero is a special place and deserves special businesses don't particularly want a Walmart. And if anybody wants the full interview, I've got a few copies of it here for myself, and it's also available as a link on our website, opposewalmart.com.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Good evening. My name is David Curtis. I live at 5520 Rosario here in Atascadero. I want to talk a little bit about an AP report that I read last week concerning the city of Stockton. And a brief conversation I had with the city attorney, Mr. Noski, of that city. In 2005, the city council voted to support construction of a Walmart in that city. The case was eventually taken to court, and the judge decided the environmental impact report was unsatisfactory and inadequate. There was an immediate appeal started by the developer, Walmart, and the city. Last Tuesday, in a rather unprecedented move, the city council voted to withdraw from that appeal. Additionally, the city council announced it would be proposing a ban on supercenters to preclude any future developments. The vote to withdraw from the appeal was interesting. There are seven people on that city council. The vote was not 4-3. It was not 5-2. It was not 6-1. It was 7-0. In my discussion with the city council, he indicated that the consensus was that this type of development would be detrimental to that city in its own view of itself and its own sense of purpose of what they want Stockton to become. It was significant for several reasons. First, the city council ultimately reversed itself. It is going in a different direction. Secondly, as I just stated, the city council was unanimous in its decision to withdraw from the appeal. Incidentally, the appeal will continue, I'm told. The third major issue is that it is felt that Walmart is not seen as beneficial to the city of Stockton any longer. It may be that what we're talking about here is internal politics within Stockton and a division within Stockton, and the developers and builders may have one view of the construction of the city, whereas other merchants and other city people will have a definitely different view. And that may be the case here in Atascadero. I would urge the city council, especially those supporters on the city council of Walmart development, to.
Good evening. Mike Jackson, 5502 Ensenada. I come here tonight to address some of the and bring forth some information regarding they call it a creek setback, but I believe this proposal, whatever it is, zone change, general plan change, affects every property owner. EcoSlow started this suit I believe it was self-serving and selfish and very incomplete. If they had a real interest in the creek of Atascadero, they would address a lot of issues. The city would have already been addressing a lot of issues. I grew up around creeks. I live by the creek. I think they're great. And when I first moved to my place, I hauled out a lot of trash. That's back when I could. I believe that the city council agreed to settle this lawsuit out of pressure from EcoSlow. They probably didn't have much choice. It was done in literally behind closed doors without any input from the city. Again, when you have a large, like the EDC, standing over you, threatening a lawsuit, you got to do something because you're watching out for the city's finances. Well, it's affected everybody, and this creek setback has grown to include every parcel in town by your inclusion of designated areas, of significant drainage areas. That's almost every parcel. Why I've been recuperating, I've had an opportune time to read and study and come up with some very interesting information. One of the things that I've been reading is the native tree inventory for Atascadero. Very interesting. It says we have 2.2 million trees in Atascadero. Then you read a little farther, and it says that we have, it is clear Atascadero has a higher number of trees in its woodlands than do natural stands. Okay. A large oak tree takes up to 100 gallons of water a day. 2.2 million trees at 10 gallons a day, that's 22 million gallons. 5 gallons a day, that's 11 million gallons. There are numerous studies available that have been documented for many, many years regarding the effects of woodlands, tree canopy, on the effect of the streams, taking a perennial stream and turning it into an intermittent stream by the fact that the water is being drawn out of the water table faster than it can come in. The large tree canopies in Atascadero actually gather up to 25% of the rainfall and never hits the ground at times, on top of the fact the trees use that much water. As you can see around town, 2001, they talked about places all over the world, and they talk about one in Spain here where they have to address the fact that land use has changed, the forests are overgrowing, and the stream flows are subsiding because they're not the parcels are not being clear-cut and used for farmland and different things. The canopy is taking over, and they're losing their water. I'd like to give these to you guys to have you look at them. Also, one of my other kind of my pet peeves, and actually it's better than it used to be, is the way that the wild and feral and free-roaming cats have been allowed to live in the creek and their effect on habitat, and there's also a great report on that. So I'd like to submit these for you guys to look over and learn a little bit about for our, what was it, May 8th meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. If you just give those to the city clerk, we'll make sure the council gets a copy.
My name is John Shadak. I live at 5204 Ensenada. I think a lot of you are pretty familiar with me by now. I would like to speak about the setback meeting that we had last week. I thought it was interesting that since where they had a stand-up vote by the people, it was all but unanimous against the tree setback ordinance. But yet the planning council still found themselves split in their vote. Apparently some of them didn't think that a majority meant anything to them. But there was definitely a majority against it, and we were all property owners that were there, people that are going to be affected by this land seizure. Whatever you want to call it, because it is a land seizure. You're taking property from us, but yet you're leaving us with the taxes, not allowing us to do anything to them, but yet you're leaving us with the taxes. You are exempting commercial, but you're leaving the resident with the taxes. I think it's very interesting the way it's set up. I think it is something that is unanimously opposed by the property owners. I don't know about the business owners because commercial is exempted, which is interesting. Again, I hope that you consider the possibility that we don't need a setback ordinance. I think the best stewards of the creek system in Atascadero are the property owners, with the exception of a minor few, which can be controlled by litter ordinances and such that are already in place. The people that own the property own it for one reason only. They think it's beautiful, and they want to protect it. I've been living over the creek for 32 years, and I've done everything I could to keep it natural. And the only time that anything was affected was when the city, with their engineers, went into the creek bed and modified the creek bed and did some damage to it then. I was promised that they would make right the damage that they caused to my property. But now, up to this point, I, you know, was foolishly expecting it to be taken care of. But, you know, when you had the lawsuit taking care of this situation here with the city council, I figured, well, okay, now that they finally got that north of our property has caused the flow to increase and has caused more damage. But the specific work done by the city when they crossed my property and poured concrete in the stream bed caused the damage to my property. And I was assured by a council member, and I've got a photograph of the person in the Telegram Tribune saying this person's been harmed by the city and we'll make it right. You did pour several tons of concrete a little bit further down from my property, close to my property, but you haven't taken care of the spot that's of most concern to me. I'm still waiting for that. Now, one thing, the main reason why I'm here is that I'd like to ask you, if possible, when you do have this meeting, now it's in May, when you do have this meeting, would you do me a favor and place it first on the agenda, not third on the agenda? We had this room filled with people, and they have families and stuff like that, and we sweated through an argument that droned on and on and on about something totally uninteresting to us, but we were all here for that. Please put it first on the agenda so when the people do come, they can get the business done. We'll clear the building for you, and you can get on to the other work that you need, okay? But please don't put it second or third down on the agenda. Thank you very much.
Mr. Sherrick, I think it will be the only thing on the agenda.
That would be good. One way or another. That's true.
Hello. My name is Kelly Long, and I've lived in Atascadero for about 30 years. I am a small business owner. I have a store that's right across the street from the Walmart property. It's called Kelly's Casuals. I'm here because I believe that we need Walmart in Atascadero. I believe that it's going to stimulate business and create the much-needed foot traffic that we need for the existing businesses down at that end of the town. I talk to people every day, mostly local people, and nearly everyone is in favor of a great shopping experience with Walmart included. I think that the majority of the city council members don't really know what the residents of Atascadero, what we really want and what kind of shopping experience we really want. So please reconsider and think about small businesses before you deny this project. We need the Walmart foot traffic to keep our businesses in business. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Long.
Kelly, I did want to thank you on behalf of my wife. It was the only store in town that has petites, great selection, and thank you for staying in business out there at the annex. We appreciate all the businesses hanging in out there. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Luna, fellow council members, city staff, fellow citizens of Atascadero. Tonight I'm addressing the proposed citywide creek setback ordinance.
Do we have your name, please?
I'm Mark Gibbs. I live on Senegal Road here in Atascadero. After reviewing United States geographical survey map as described in the proposed creek setback zoning ordinance and general plan amendment, it's obvious that many, many people, possibly thousands, are affected by the proposed ordinance, affected by blue line creeks, wetlands, significant drainage courses, the saline.
All the folks here tonight are supportive of a prosperous future for Atascadero. I am dedicated to that endeavor. I see a supercenter as bad development. I am for diverse development that includes local and out-of-town retail, restaurants that fit our community. Recently, I observed a San Luis Obispo Chamber leadership discussion on economic development for the county. This is an annual course for 30-plus young and up and coming business people and entrepreneurs throughout the San Luis Obispo County. A number of experts lent their research, knowledge, and experience in the county. I learned a lot. There was also a panel discussion including both Keith Mathias from Rotman and Tom Comer from Oppose Walmart. And they shared their perspective on the Walmart Supercenter in Atascadero. At the time, I was miffed at the negativity Mr. Mathias showed toward the city of Atascadero, as though it was the stepchild of the county. He said, and I quote, "The city of Atascadero will not talk to Walmart. Atascadero is deeply in debt," end of quote, and went on to say how much more the city would go into debt each year if they kept Walmart from coming. Finally, he said Atascadero has, and I quote, "the reputation of trouble," and that Walmart was the only retail that stepped up to the plate for the annex development. In light of that, it was confusing to see the article in the Atascadero, in the Times Tribune this Sunday, where the Rotmans see themselves as part of the Atascadero community. Then I wonder why there was so many negative comments about Atascadero in front of business people of the county. Some in Atascadero and City Council have a different point of view on the Supercenter. But we care about Atascadero. I love coming home to Atascadero from LA where my daughters live, and I have a sense of loyalty to the city. Now changing gears to development in Paso, the Tribune also had a story in the Big Buzz on March 29th, and they carried the story of the Golden Hills Plaza being developed in Paso Robles. The proposed development will have 30 tenants. 10% will be restaurants. This development is also on 26 acres, the same as the same amount of acres as Walmart bought at the annex. One wonders how Paso Robles is able to attract such a development when Rotman says it is so difficult. Instead, Rotman has gone with a single superstore by selling the land to Walmart. Many of the stores, including Lowe's, purported by Rotman to have shown an interest in Atascadero, are now interested in the Paso Robles Golden Hills development. Why did Rotman sell to the first bidder? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Perkins.
My name is Tino Santos, and Mr. Mayor Luna and City Council members. Until a few months ago, I never attended a City Council meeting. I should have, because I have lived in Atascadero for quite a while. But I have good news tonight. I'm a bearer of good news before the bad news. I visited Walmart in Paso Robles the other day, and I noticed that none of the workers were tied down at their stations with a chain around their ankles, nor the mean bosses were outside with their whips forcing people to go inside. The stock on them or have anybody worked for Walmart, but this constant tirade against Walmart and bringing people from outside in essence says that the people at Atascadero are a bunch of idiots, that only a few wise men and women know what's best for our town. Look around. I mean, another gas station closed. Another restaurant closed recently over here. I mean, we are going down the hill fast, and I can't for the life of me understand this terrible opposition to Walmart. It's the unions, I guess, don't like Walmart, but let Walmart have a chance at Atascadero. Many people say, well, they don't pay much. You'd rather have kids smoking pot and stealing from Kmart and doing other things, or wouldn't it be better if they had a job that paid them and gave them some self-respect? The video was shown tonight. If I read the paper today, the court sided with Walmart. You know, they bring in all these evil things. Last meeting, I wasn't here, but I heard it on the radio, and a lady even kind of suggested that Walmart probably was the mark of the beast 666 of the book of Revelation. It shows how bad it is when you have private interpretation of Scripture. I mean, Walmart is not an evil organization. Walmart would not have thrived if people didn't support it, didn't shop there. They say, well, they get stuff from China. So does Long's, so does Target, so does Kmart, so does Sears, just everyone. And we're not saying that's good that people in China don't have it very good, but let's face it, you can hardly buy anything that's not made in China, unfortunately. And I resent the fact that some people in this town have assumed that they know what's best for me and those who want Walmart. Let Walmart come, and if nobody shops there, then they'll go out of business. I appeal to the city council members, and some of you are so anti-Walmart, you have blinds on. And it's your right, it's your prerogative. But wise up, our town is in bad shape. I take walks downtown all the time, so I try to stay in shape for an old man. I guess I'm in good shape because I walk a great deal, and I have a great deal of energy. And I see sidewalks are broken, streets that look in terrible condition. There are no jobs here. I have 3 children, and they want jobs. They want jobs that pay more than what Atascadero has to offer. And therefore, I appeal to the people of Atascadero. We do not need outsiders from Cucamonga or wherever they come from to tell us, or Stockton or Turlock, that we don't know what's best for Atascadero. We do know what's best. And what's best is the free enterprise, is to allow Walmart to come here. And then if people don't want to shop there, they will close. Then those who oppose Walmart can have their organic hot dog stand and put a bunch of poison bushes around so that the rest of us who don't eat organic hot dogs will stay away. But I am tired and sick of the self-appointed people in Atascadero. We have divided this city, and we are divided. You know, we must have no malice towards no one, but sometimes it's extremely difficult to remain calm and not to really get upset with some people who will use half-truths, I don't know how to put it, but I get very upset. I mean, I love this country.
Republican independence. And from all occupations. Our primary mission has been to protect our city and way of life from economic development that we believe will change our city's character forever. We believe that everyone, whether you're for or against this Walmart Supercenter, is for a prosperous and successful, livable town where we can raise our children in an environment without unmanageable traffic, noise, and LA-style urbanization. As we said before, we are all neighbors. We may have differences in our vision for the future of Atascadero, but what binds us together is more than what divides us. The proposed Walmart Supercenter is dividing us. We have always put Atascadero first. That's what is most important. If everything that Walmart and its supporters say is true, we would not oppose the project. However, in our search for what it really means when a Walmart Supercenter comes to town, we discovered many independent and academic studies that revealed the reality versus the rhetoric of Walmart's arguments. Those studies and other information can be accessed from our website, opposewalmart.com, and many other sources. These studies convinced us that a Walmart Supercenter is just not good economic development for Atascadero. We are, and we have always said we are, for good economic development at the Annex that will provide a triple bottom line, a positive return on investment for the city, developer, and the community. I would like to thank those on the City Council who had the courage, did their homework, and took a stand against a Walmart Supercenter during the campaign as candidates. We applaud that courage, and we know that the election results reflected that stand and your desire to bring transparency to city government. Thank you. Keep up the faith. We know that all the City Council members here want the best for Atascadero, and we appreciate your allowing community input on this critical land use issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Komar. Seeing no one else at the podium, or the lectern, rather, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the Council. Any Council comments or Okay, may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Do we want to consider having a couple of items drop from the agenda at this point? A couple of things at the end. I wouldn't mind just allowing for more discussion on a couple of the items at the end anyway. I had some suggestions on the norms that I wanted to suggest some changes, and the general plan amendment policy might take a little more discussion. I think
that'll go pretty fast.
Okay.
Why don't we get to that point, and then we'll make a decision.
Okay. Yeah. I'll move approval of agenda.
Second.
Got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay to approve the agenda. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes.
And Mayor Luna.
Yes.
5-0. Motion passes.
Next item is presentations. Proclamation declaring April 2007 Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month and April 14th Day of the Child. And Councilmember Bayrou will read this.
Thank you, Mayor Luna. It's the City of Atascadero Proclamation, Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month for April 2007, Day of the Child, which is April 14th, to optimal development. And whereas the City of Atascadero recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, and the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas the activities of this month will provide an opportunity to acknowledge youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff, and to raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of such programs. And may we remember to listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Ellen Bayrou, council member of the City of Atascadero, proclaim April 2007 the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 14th, 2007, Day of the Child. This is signed by George Luna, and I take it you are from the Child Care Planning Council? Please talk right into the mic, because I don't think
we're going to. Why don't you come forward, Carol, and accept the proclamation, and then you can say some words.
Carol Capito. I'm coordinator of the Child Care Planning Council, and on behalf of the Child Care Planning Council and the Child Abuse Prevention Council, we would like to thank you for the proclamation, for taking the time tonight to read it. And we'd also like to invite you to take a tour of local child care programs here in Atascadero. You have some wonderful programs here, and close by, our First Five School Readiness Center is up and running in Paso Robles, and it's something we hope to expand to other areas of the county, and we'd like to invite you to take a tour either locally or of the First Five program, and to get a little bit better idea about what's going on in your community and what the parent needs are. We still have a serious lack of child care accessibility for families. Many families are still making choices on where to place their child based on availability of a slot rather than what best meets their needs. And we need to ensure that every family has the opportunity to choose quality child care, not just choose a space that's open for their children. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. With that, we'll move on to council announcements and reports. Councilmember Clay? Yeah, the lights are working.
I have a couple things I want to talk about. First off, in regards to the creek setback and the meeting that's scheduled for May 8th, it was brought out at the Planning Commission meeting. I sat through the whole thing. It lasted till about 12:15 or so, that up to 50% of the property owners in Atascadero could be impacted by this eighth meeting. I would like to throw that out for the rest of the council.
Sure, that's something I could support. I think we have said we want to do better at keeping everyone informed in town of critical issues. This, I'm a little surprised at how much this issue has grown. It's taken on a wider impact than I think was initially perceived. And when you look at even some man-made interventions, in addition to Blue Lion Creeks, things that have become drainage solutions on property, that might even have an impact. I think folks just need to hear about it. So I fully support. I think May 8th, having a little extra time, does give a chance to have some notice. But I do think we should notice our entire community.
Well, maybe you should explain what staff has in mind as far as notification.
We certainly can notify, much like we did the motorcycle with the cards, the motorcycle issue some years ago. We can notify the entire city.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate.
Good.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Well, do we have consensus on that? Because I have another issue.
Well, yeah, I think that was...
Okay, so we're going to do that.
I'm good with the notice. That's fine.
Yeah. Fine. Could I continue then?
Sure. Okay. I thought you were finished.
The other thing is in regards to the Walmart issue. The CEO of Walmart had an extensive interview on the Neil Cabuta show on Fox, and he was hit up about all the negative publicity that Walmart's been getting, and he pointed out that that 137 million people shop at Walmart every week, and that there's 1.5 million associates or workers, and even if 1% of those workers were dissatisfied or disgruntled, that's 15,000 in the community, so it's pretty easy. In regards to the Golden Hills project, they have Lowe's. They have an anchor, and that's the reason that'll prosper out there. Walmart and Paso, again, talking about the wages, they start at $8.50, and the tops is $21.36 for their employees there. As far as Mr. Keith Mathias' comments, I certainly would like to hear them from him, but we've had a reputation, unfortunately, in Atascadero over the years that we're not business friendly, and a lot of people will tell you that. And again, make your own decisions. Visit a Super Walmart. Visit the Walmarts in the area. One of my friends called me the other day and said that he went to Costco to purchase a television, you know, one of these fancy ones, and that he went to a Super Walmart in another area, and he saved $300 just on the purchase of the exact same thing. So there is a savings to the people. And again, I want to say make your own decisions. And again, I would like to see it put on the ballot. And the people I talked to, I think it would pass. And that's my little report.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, thank you. Out of deference to the audience, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't have an opportunity to discuss that the city manager and I had attended on March 9th within our cities, such as schools, parks, and other locations where children are apt to congregate. And I think that this would certainly afford our local law enforcement an additional tool in dealing with a very significant problem.
I would certainly support that. Go ahead.
Sorry, the police and fire chief are including that since the conference we attended. We did get some information, and they are including that information and what we already do in an action plan under your public safety goal.
Okay. Is there consensus to go forward with
that?
Sure.
My question is, do we already have something some similar as far as distance and so on and so forth?
There are some state regulations, and we do have some reporting in place, and we have done some of the things that that Councilmember Brendler and I learned of. There is more we can do.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I would like to see it as an agenda item where we discuss that the range of solutions that communities might consider.
Well, it will come back as part of our goals.
As a staff report, yes.
Councilmember Barreau.
Thank you, Mayor Luna. I just wanted to respond on a couple of items, first being the creek setback comments that were made, and this has been part of our general plan ever since we became a city, and there was never the political will to address this issue, and that's why it's coming up now. It has nothing to do with EcoSlow. I think that's a completely separate issue. When you talk about where numbers come from, the Regional Quality Control Board sets 50 feet. So if one extreme you could say would be 50 feet. I think what would be good for the public to know, and what I would like for the staff to include in their report, is what do other cities do to protect their riparian areas? We're not the only city who has come forward to protect riparian areas in their community. So I think that would be good for people to know. And I also would like to know and include in the report, what are the recommendations from the tree inventory? Our urban forest is very special and very important to all who have property in our town. And I think those recommendations should be included when we consider this ordinance. Regarding Walmart, I appreciate members of the public coming forth and bringing information that's not available in our local media. I do feel our local media does not always show a complete picture. And just the points that always brought up that Atascadero is not seen as a business-friendly community, which I find ironic, because everyone always says that we've had a pro-development council. And I want to say, knowing the council members as I do, we are a pro-business council, as much as people like to put us in boxes and say we're not. So we're all looking forward to the annex being developed, and we hope that it can be developed in a compatible way. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay?
Don't hold your breath if there isn't an anchor. Nothing's going on out there. Yes, in regards to the creek setback, it was kind of interesting because there was like 125 people here, and there was when they stood up, they all were against the creek setback, period. And there was, I think, four people spoke in favor, but two of them were on commissions and so on. And when it come down to deliberation, there wasn't one word said about the will of the people or any.
Just one comment on the setback issue. I would encourage all of those in the audience to certainly educate yourself. There are copies of the previous general plans that are available at the library. And it may behoove you to study those and see what happened, you know, back in the day when those were developed and what has happened since then. And it's just an act of further education.
Yeah, when the city incorporated in 1979, the general plan talked about establishing a creek setback of not less than 50 feet, excuse me. Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, I am interested in all of those topics that we'll be talking about at future council meetings, but I would prefer to...
I agree.
We'll have plenty of chance to discuss those, but by my lack of comment tonight, I am equally interested in those areas. I had a few areas I wanted to just touch on briefly, almost as announcements. I was pleased to be asked to join a statewide League of California Cities committee dealing with children's health care. And my background for 30 years has primarily been in the healthcare industry, and I look forward to working with cities and some opportunities to help in that area. I have heard often of concerns we have about businesses struggling in our town. It is a tough time in the economy in general, and we have lost several long-term businesses here recently. But rather than looking at it piecemeal, I have asked Joanne Main of the Chamber to work on this, and she's agreed to send a report to Council just that reviews the businesses in our community there, that those that have closed down recently and any that have started up, and just see what's the net impact and see if we can learn from those experiences. I did want to mention being involved with the Economic Vitality Corporation, which is our region's arm of works on business retention and recruitment in our area. We had a interesting report at our last meeting with some chamber folks who visited China. And, I used to kind of feel sorry for China, like maybe we were taking advantage of them. I tell you, the business leaders that visited China are more concerned that they may be outpacing us. And so there's probably some interesting things to learn from that China experience. Something has come up at SLOCOG, our San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, that I did want to mention to council in general rather than later, is there is a tool that's been in place for the county to look at economic impacts of our decisions. And interesting, there's a model that's been used that's used primarily as inputs, is what our general plans say and what our history has been. And I could say it's pretty unanimous, the five county supervisors and the one representative from each city that sits on the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments isn't really upset with the model, but they're very upset with the results that that model indicates. And I've asked SLOCOG staff to come and make a presentation to council at some point to not review the whole model, but the model as it applies. It is a council that has a desire to be supportive of business, and we're finding our way as a new council of what that means and how to do that. But I know on the Finance Committee, George Luna and I are committed to finding some ways to do better, and so we're going to be working at that, and we've all agreed to go together at a shopping center convention coming up, and I think we're looking for answers, and I support the new council to find our way in that area.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. There are nine items on this consent calendar. Anyone want to pull something?
I did want to mention, I did find a couple of typos. City clerk says she can take care of that without having to review. And
those would be in the minutes?
Okay. And with that, I would...
Well, let me open it. Sure. Is anyone in the public who wants to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, bring it back and ask for a motion.
I just have a quick request.
Sure.
On the, was it A1, the strategic planning workshop, when they had this little summaries about what we said, I don't really think I said it exactly like that. I mean, am I allowed to modify that?
I was saying they were a little weak in
some areas. They were kind of really cryptic.
So did you do these, Marsha, or Bill Mathis?
Actually, the notes on A1, those are from Bill Mathis, yes. Uh-huh.
And he's not here, so.
No. I suggest, defend himself. I suggest next time.
I'm not a, well, I mean, just some of these things I don't really think I said, or maybe she interpreted it. It's nothing real meaningful, but if this is a public document, I don't want people to think I'm a track runner, by the way. She kept saying on track when I talked. So if these minor changes are acceptable,
Why don't we pull this and
circulate it?
I would like to pull that one and have a chance to come back and deal with it. Because it's unfortunate that I think a lot of the content was not captured. Mm-hmm. And we may want to discuss that at a future time.
That meeting was taped, wasn't it?
No, it's not.
No. I want to make a motion that we accept 2 through, is it 9?
Got a motion to accept items 2 through 9.
Second.
And a second. Councilmember Clay made the motion. Councilmember O'Malley seconded it for the consent calendar, items A2 through A9.
That was the one you had questions on?
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
And Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
So what's your pleasure with item A1?
Do you want us to continue it or just say items we want changed?
If there's just a few things that you want changed, you could tell me, or you could continue it and tell me, you know, tomorrow or something. And
well,
anyone
I think we
else
should continue
any?
It.
I agree.
It's fine.
We'll just continue. We'll get the revised one, and you guys can check it over. So
okay,
if anyone else has any other changes to their personal little
can I make
square.
Let me know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
I just hope we don't get bogged down. We have so many important things coming up that we don't get bogged down on this particular issue.
It's a consent.
It's kind of, most of the stuff I see in here is pretty harmless. And
it's a consensus calendar.
I agree, it's something very minor. But yeah. If it's a public document, I think it should be reflect a little bit more how I felt like I protected myself at that meeting.
So
I don't want it to take time either.
I think we have consensus to individually review it and make structural comments.
Okay.
And hopefully they'll be acceptable to Mr. Mathis as well as the city clerk.
All right. Thank you.
And we would also pick up the bags after they're full. This item was brought to the city by the Interact Club. I was very pleased that they brought this idea to us, and we wanted to make a full program so other citizens or groups in the city could take advantage with it. Tonight with me is Julia Becca and Georgia Harrison. They're with the Interact Club, and I would like to have them say a couple words for you tonight.
Welcome.
Hello, my name is Julia Becchia. I am a sophomore at Atascadero High School, and I was the chair of the Adopt a Road program.
And I am Georgia Harrison. I am also a sophomore at Atascadero High, and I'm the treasurer of Interact Club. For those who don't know, the Interact Club is a community service club sponsored by Rotary, which is dedicated to serving the community both locally and beyond.
We had originally envisioned the Adopt a Road program as a community service project, which various clubs from our high school would participate in maintaining specified streets from around our campus. This not only preserves a clean environment, but also provides an excellent opportunity for individuals to partake in activities that give back to the community.
Our good friend Lee Swan introduced the initial idea to Interact Club this fall. We really liked it, so we talked with the high school and the district administration. A few members of our club presented the idea to Steve Kahn at the city, hoping to get financial help because the signs do cost money. Mr. Kahn has expanded the idea, extending the reach of the project to all of Atascadero.
We asked the City Council to approve this program. This project is beneficial to the environment, and it allows individuals to share in the ownership of the city. It additionally provides an excellent opportunity for students to earn community service hours while making our city a better place. Thank you and good evening.
Thank you. Why don't you stay there and we'll see if there are any questions. Councilmember O'Malley?
Well, sure. I think it's a great idea, and I commend you for coming up with a good idea, and I suggest you might want to be like your adult counterparts. Rotary is often coming up with great ideas, and when they actually want to go out and get it done, they talk to Kiwanis, and they have Key Club up there at the high school. I'm sure they'd be happy to work with you as well.
How many members in the Interact Club?
About probably 20 at the most.
20.
Probably less.
That's enough.
That's great.
Mayor, Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I'm a Kiwanis member also. And it's good to see Rotary get out and getting their hands dirty a little bit for a change. But I support it.
Councilmember Barreau.
I'm very excited to see this. I've had community members come to me and talk to me about litter in our community, and they wanted to, you know, create little neighborhood groups to, you know, all work together and you know, create some community feeling. And I think this is a great opportunity to tie into that. And I love the high school kids getting involved. I work really hard getting my kids to take care of the environment as well. So thank you very much for coming forward to us.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Yes, thank you. Your goal in making Atascadero a better place is certainly commendable. And Steve, a question for you. Is there any way we can get some buy-in, perhaps from the waste haulers and the landfill? Because I think
for them to participate in that on a larger scale, and I'd like to invite them to join in on that.
I'll invite them to that meeting.
Thank you.
If they can get a pass out of school. Councilmember Clay.
Yes. Since the high school colors are orange, be sure and provide them with some real sharp orange stuff so we don't get them run over, okay?
Seeing no more council questions, close it to the council, open it to the public. Anyone in the public want to comment?
Eric Greening, and this is another sterling example, as we have seen before and are seeing at an increasing rate, of youth taking the leadership in making this a better place. And so I think we need to give them all the support we can in being able to do that and take ownership of their community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. Councilmember O'Malley.
I move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, second by Councilmember Clay, to authorize the Public Works Director to implement the Adopt a Road program. Roll call, please. Wait a minute, discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Barreau.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes.
And Mayor Luna.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Next item on the agenda is Eagle Creek Golf Course reuse. This is a study session. First thing we'll start with is disclosure of ex parte. I will begin. I met with Mr. Gearhart in his office about a year ago on a different subject, and this came up as an aside, and I suggested that that he hold a neighborhood meeting, and I think he acted on that suggestion. Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes, I too haven't discussed with the applicant this project. I had discussed the previous project at this site with Mr. Gearhart and some of his staff. I have on this project talked with several neighbors about their input and thoughts on this project.
Councilmember Clay?
No, I haven't met with anybody. Kelly won't talk with me.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Yes, my contact with the neighborhood was pre-election when I was walking the neighborhoods, and I did receive recently a email that I suspect was sent to the rest of you.
I think that was sent to all of us.
Right, with just some questions by one of the neighbors.
Yeah, that's the one. Councilmember Burrow?
I don't have any ex parte.
Okay, with that, we'll... Councilmember O'Malley?
Well, I did forward that email that we probably all got to staff, and I think Warren was prepared to respond to those whenever you'd like to have that.
Okay, we'll make that as part of the staff report, I hope. With that, Community Development Director Warren Fraze.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item tonight is a study session. We're not going to be making any decisions tonight. We are looking for the council to provide staff and the applicant some direction on how to proceed with this application. This is the second study session that we've held on this item. Just a little background, we did look at this March of 2006, almost a year ago. At that time, the proposal was, I think we pretty much know where it is. It's along Highway 101, Santa Barbara Road. This is the location of the site here. This is an aerial photo that was taken a couple years ago when the golf course was still in operation. You see the golf course located here along the freeway. There's a cul-de-sac with single-family residential located here. And then along Atascadero Road, there was four additional single-family lots that were created in 2001. This is the layout of the project. You can see these houses, which were part of the original plan development, were located on the smaller lots. When these lots were developed, the zoning required those to be put on one-acre lots. You can see the boundaries of those lots are larger, and they extended into the golf course. There were easements across these private lots that allowed the operation of the golf course. So these lots include many of the golf course facilities. You have the clubhouse located here with its parking lot and driveway. The remainder of the driving range was here. There's another building that looks like a house right here. It's not actually a house. It's a shell building that was used as a support shop for the golf course operation. There's another shop building that's located here. This is the lake. In terms of our land use, we have a couple different land use designations. The cul-de-sac, Eagle Creek Court, has the designation of SRFX. That's single family residential. The X means half acre minimum lot size. The four lots that were located on Atascadero Road are single family residential Y, which is a 1 acre minimum lot size. The remainder of the golf course is in a designation called CREC or commercial rec, which allows for commercial recreation type uses like golf courses, RV parks, that sort of thing. This is the zoning, corresponding X zone here and Y zone here. The zoning for the golf course was LS, which is limited recreation. Then on top of the entire project, what really holds it together land use and planning wise is what's called a plan development overlay. So there was a PD8 that was adopted when the project was first approved. The PD basically locks in the site plan, where the houses go, what the golf course locations are, what the different types of uses are. So anything that happens within the site needs to be consistent with the adopted plan development master plan. So one of the things we'll have to be looking at is an amendment to that master plan to allow whatever the new use that's going to be proposed to fit with that new master plan. There is a fork of Paloma Creek that runs through the site. You can kind of see the creek located right along here. The striped area is the floodplain, so majority of the golf course area is constrained by a floodplain. Some of the existing houses were developed within the floodplain. They're required to be built on raised pads that raise them outside of or above the 100-year flood event. In terms of the project history, real quick, in 1991, the Plan Development 8 rezoning was adopted. That allowed for the golf course, the driving range, and the original 13 houses. In 1998, before the project was actually built, the PD8 was amended. This allowed the golf course to take access off of Atascadero Road. Originally, the project had been designed to take access off Santa Barbara Road. It is going to propose a little bit different solution tonight. So these are just some photos that show some of the details of the site. There's the clubhouse. This is what the golf course looks like today. View from Santa Barbara Road. That's the secondary shop by the lake. These are some of the bridges and existing facilities that remain on the single-family lots. And this is that other shop building on Atascadero Road. Here's a blow-up so you can kind of see the condition of the site today. This is where the original 13 lots did have use easements between the golf course and the yards. This fence that was put in a couple months ago shows where that property line is between the private lots and the golf course parcel. This is a current photo of the golf clubhouse. This is the shop building on Atascadero Road. This isn't actually a house. It looks like a house, but it's an empty shell on the inside with no plumbing or other facilities. This is the secondary shop building by the lake. This is just an example of the two types of fencing. This white rail fence was the fence that was originally put in with the project. This is the current fence that was installed to define the property boundaries between the golf course and the residential lots. This is kind of an overview looking back toward the lake and the freeway of the current site. This is a bridge that's located on this lot here. There's, I think, four bridges that are currently on the site. One of the issues is the trees that were put in were dependent on the irrigation. We're already starting to see a number of the trees start to die off now that they're not being watered regularly. So staff did outline a number of issues that we would like the council to give us some direction on as we proceed with the applicant on preparing a project that actually can go through Planning Commission and Council for approval. The first question is what would be the public benefit of the PD8 without the golf course? Our city policy is that planned developments need to provide a public benefit, so we're looking for some direction on what would be an acceptable public benefit. What, if any, land use restrictions will be placed on the 10-acre lot? It'll be a large lot, much larger than typical single-family lots are. We're looking for direction on what, if any, restrictions in terms of future uses, development of that lot would need to be. That is an important gateway lot to the city of Atascadero. Second question is, should the underlying LS zoning district that permits recreational uses such as RV parks be removed from the property to prevent future master plan amendments? As we've seen from the history, this PD8's been amended a number of times. If we leave the existing LS zone and the existing general plan, it really only means you need to go back and amend the master plan to start reintroducing recreation uses. So we do need some direction from the council how tight you want to close this off in terms of allowing yet more future amendments to it. There is a number of existing improvements related to the golf course that are still there. We have the sand traps, the lakes, the bridges. There's an irrigation system underground. There's a well. There's driving ranges, pieces of cart path, and the trees that are spread across not only the 10-acre lot, but as I showed you in the aerial photo, those are also on a number of the 12 single-family lots that surround it. So we are looking for some direction in terms of how much of those existing facilities need to be removed before this is converted to a residential use. We showed you pictures of the new fencing. We're looking for direction in terms of whether that new fencing is acceptable. And then we need some direction on what should be the proper reuse of the golf course shop buildings and whether or not we need to put additional restrictions on those so that they don't become some sort of use that wasn't intended. The applicant has been working with the neighborhood. They did submit a letter a couple days ago that outlined their proposal and what appears to be support from the neighborhood. I think with that, I'll turn it over to the applicant and let them fill you in on what the latest proposal is. So that'll conclude staff's report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
We'll go over the email that we did receive, I believe, a day ago. One question was whether the general plan designations, if they remain commercial rec and LS8, whether there was a risk that the properties could become a commercial intensive use in the future. And it is possible with a master plan amendment that you could introduce one of the allowed uses. So that is a risk that's out there. The second question was about the rezone to residential uses. They were asking about, you know, what would happen with a 10-acre lot, what the zoning would be, and what would prevent that from being further subdivided by a future owner yet again. That is an issue and a question. So whatever designation we put on there, we'll have to be careful to prevent it from being possible to subdivide it yet again through easements and restrictions of some sort. So that is an issue we'll have to take a careful look at. And the third question was about amending PD8 to remove the agricultural uses, including farm animal raising, crop production, grazing, outdoor recreation. And that is a risk. If we leave the LS zoning on there and we leave the PD8 without any amendments, those would all become basically permitted uses on that large lot. We definitely don't want to see a large-scale agricultural or grazing operation on the remainder of that lot, most likely. So those are issues that are out there. We are looking for council direction on how tightly we want to control this in the future, whether we want to make it just exclusive residential or whether we want to be fairly flexible. We do have the ability, the city, to control that at this point.
Good. Following up on the...
Wait a minute. That's...
I'd raised a question. I was going to follow up on it.
Go ahead.
And just, and I did want to make a general comment to the public that it's very helpful. One, we, of course, all read the many emails we get, but if we can get an email of questions about an issue like this ahead of time, I always forward that email to staff and can get some answers to these questions. And rather than, you know, coming here at night and maybe asking a question, staff may not have as much opportunity to research it. So we all appreciate any questions you have, getting them to us sooner, and we can maybe get a little more detailed answer for you.
Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the word risk. I mean, commercial. I thought that's what we were after on this council. And isn't that, you know, would be a great thing. I mean, it's right off an overpass. And the other thing, risk in regards to farm animals, if you just go south of this whole piece of property, why there's nothing but grazing from here clear to the bottom of the grade. And, you know, just grazing animals don't create any problems. And you've got 4-H and FFA projects and so on. And I thought that we were trying to maintain our country atmosphere. What's going on here? I don't see risk with commercial. I don't see risk with animals.
I think we should all wait till we hear from the public. Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Yes. Thank you, Warren. I had a question reference to the acceptability of that fence. You said that was a decision we were going to give direction on. Is there a compliance issue with that now?
Yeah, there is a compliance issue right now in that it's not shown on the master plan. It doesn't meet the current standard.
Concerned about RV park in this area, and so I'd like to have folks address that if others have concerns or if that's something that could be taken off the table. Please let us hear what you've thought.
Okay. With that, we'll close it to the council and open it to the applicant or the applicant's representative. Sorry. Ms. Kirk.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Jamie Kirk, resident of Atascadero, and I'm representing Mr. Gearhart this evening. And I would like to say it's brief, but it is, I'll try to make it as brief as possible. I've got a PowerPoint presentation. Thank you, Warren. The project site, it's a 10-acre site, as you know, is previously operated as Eagle Creek Golf Course. The golf course closed in spring of 2005. History, Warren went through that pretty good. We had a study session over a year ago, and the proposal at that point was to include reuse of the golf course property with two single-family dwellings, a youth recreational field, and a cellular site. At that study session, the council determined, and that was based on input from the neighbors, that that proposal might not be the most appropriate use of the site, and requested that we go back and look at additional alternatives, something that was more compatible with the neighborhood, and bring that back to a future study session. A reminder of what the previous site plan looked like. This is the proposal for the youth stadium and the two houses. Tonight, we're bringing forward two alternative proposals, the original applicant-driven proposal that we intended to present at the last meeting, but we were continued due to time constraints, and also a neighborhood-driven proposal that's been resulting from a neighborhood meeting that we hosted last week. The original applicant-driven proposal was a request for a conditional use permit, not a general plan amendment, but a conditional use permit to amend the master plan of development from a golf course to one single-family dwelling with residential accessory uses. The proposal would convert the existing clubhouse facility into a residence. Access would remain from Atascadero Road. There'd be no additional site disturbance, no change to existing lot configuration. Maintenance of the 10-acre parcel would be by the property owner, and then we were going to look at addressing some landscape treatment along that existing fence. Here are some elevations of the changes to the building, and the conversion would include a connection in that breezeway between those two buildings, so that would become one structure. It's about 3,500 square feet. And this is the 10-acre parcel we're proposing. With this proposal, as well as with the proposal I'll be presenting in a few minutes, a 10-acre parcel, residential parcel with an open space easement over that parcel. The existing wording in the PD8 does allow for single-family dwellings, so there isn't necessarily a requirement to amend the language or amend the general plan. It's an allowed use currently. There were questions that staff brought up in their presentation, including public benefit, appropriate restrictions to the site, should the underlying zoning be looked at, and what happens to the extent with the surrounding areas, a single-family residence, residential accessory uses, farm animal raising, and I don't want you to think commercial hog farm. I'm thinking hobby-style farm animal raising, 4-H type level projects, home occupation uses, and ag accessory uses. Should the underlying zoning district be removed or amended to prevent future master plan amendments? We don't feel that it's necessary to amend the general plan because this isn't allowed use in the existing language for outlined in the PD8 and stated as current with the existing land use designation. And since we are proposing to record the open space easement over the property, it will preclude any recreational and commercial uses. So that's kind of the fix I think a lot of people are looking for. What will happen to the storage buildings under alternative one? The shop storage building will remain as is. It will be a residential accessory structure. And we'd look at some deed restrictions to what can happen in there through the master plan of development amendment process. We'd look for direction from you to then bring back through the planning commission process. As far as maintenance, the property maintenance will be provided by the individual property owners. The lake bridges, sand traps, wells, irrigation, that's going to remain as is. As someone will be purchasing that 10-acre lot, the driving range will be removed. And as Warren showed in his presentation, the private easements over the golf course have been deeded back to the original owners, and each owner is now responsible for restoration and maintenance. We've offered to do some restoration to the sand traps, those types of things, but as Warren said, we're under a master plan of development restriction right now, so our hands are tied as to what we can do, what we can't do, until we get some direction from the council and ultimate approval for planning commission of what's going to happen out here. The fencing has been installed and is permanent under this alternative one, and the applicant proposes to install some landscape treatment and vines, those sorts of uses to be planted, which would climb on the fence, and no cross-fencing of the individual lots as proposed with this alternative. I'm going to go into the second alternative, what we're terming the neighborhood-driven alternative. We were continued from the last item based on your discussions on the Veteran Memorial, and during that lengthy discussion you had, during your council deliberations, we had the opportunity to talk with some of the property owners out in the lobby. And so it was actually a benefit that we got continued because we talked with them. It seemed like there was some additional outreach that we can do and maybe settle some of these differences, not in front of you, but in an environment outside of here. So we contacted all the owners, noticed all the owners, and had a neighborhood workshop on the 3rd. And we submitted information on the alternative that I just presented to you. And the neighbors were given the opportunity to comment on the project, ask questions, state their opinions on the current situation and their vision of what they see for their neighborhood. And part of the collaboration at that study session resulted in a new project alternative. The concerns that were brought up by the neighborhood was vegetation. What happens to the existing landscaping? Can the dead trees be removed? Will the existing trees remain? With the fencing and aesthetics, can we come up with a project to address the appearance, location, type of fencing? What's going to happen for restoration? Can the new project implement a landscape plan, maybe looking at returning it back to the natural, the pre-golf course environment, what you see whenever you're passing through Spanish? Will someone really be down there maintaining the landscaping in front of there? There was an uncertainty on that, and they felt that that could be better maintained by somebody actually living there. So we compiled the neighborhood concerns and goals into a common statement, a neighborhood statement, brought that all together, and we did assist the neighbors with that, but sent it over to them for their approval, and they would like to present that to the City Council this evening. The neighborhood-driven proposal is, again, a conditional use permit to amend the master plan of development to change the use from a golf course to allow two residential parcels, an 8.9-acre parcel, converting the clubhouse facilities and doing that addition that I showed you as part of Alternative 1 to the single-family dwelling and allowing for residential accessory uses because we've got those other ancillary buildings. We have to acknowledge them and continue the open space easement. So there will be continued open space easement over that 8.9-acre parcel. And in addition to that, a one-acre parcel for the shop building, and that would be converted to a residential use. And then we would include with that a concept landscape restoration plan. And here is a diagram. The one-acre parcel located here off of Atascadero Road, and then the 8.9-acre parcel with the open space easement. Some photos you've seen. This is the proposed shop that would be converted to a residence. In conclusion, the single-family dwelling is an allowed use under current PD overlay, so we'd like to stick with the master plan of development, not a general plan amendment, and we'd like some direction from the council tonight to choose one of these alternatives, whether it be the applicant-driven proposal, the neighborhood-driven proposal, or another proposal. We'd like to move forward and actually have a viable project to bring back to the decision makers. We feel that the general plan amendment is unnecessary, as we've offered to record the open space easement. And if the council does choose to go with option 2, the neighborhood-driven alternative, what we've guaranteed, promised the neighbors, is that our next step would be a couple weeks after this meeting is we'd have additional workshops, probably a couple, and we'd produce a concept landscape restoration plan with input from the neighbors. We'd have a landscape architect there. We'd have an engineer there. We'd have a biologist there. And we'd come up with some sort of consensus on what's the best fit for the neighborhood. We'd also address the CCNR revisions that were brought up at our workshop and look at fencing. And that concludes my presentation. I'm here for questions. I hope that gave you enough information for your discussions this evening.
Thank you, Jamie. I think Councilmember O'Malley has a question.
Yes. This is almost too good to be true, but I think I hear you say that the applicant and the neighborhood has come to a consensus on a proposal, and it's the Eagle Creek neighborhood statement embodies that.
Yes, it does.
Well, thank you all for all of your work. I think it just shows what can be done when you take the time to listen to each other and work together. That's very commendable. My only concern would be to get our city attorney and staff input to make sure that sometimes there's some unintended consequences that what is being proposed, will it actually accomplish what the neighbors are wanting, and there isn't something that could change because we missed something.
Staff doesn't have an opposition to residential units. it does seem like it makes a lot of sense to, you know, do something with that shop building on Atascadero Road. There is a real concern that if that isn't a use that fits with the rest of the site, that it would be difficult to maintain by a single-family homeowner, and it would likely convert into something in the future that may not fit with what's an allowable use. So we like that idea. There is a concern, though. In order to do that, we're going to have to process a subdivision map and subdivide that 10-acre parcel to get those residential units onto separate lots. Doesn't appear that you can actually make a subdivision under that zoning. That's what's going to trigger the zone change and the corresponding general plan amendment. It also, when we do the zone change, opens up the opportunity to amend PD8 so we can tighten up the list of permitted uses. There is a real concern that if we don't change the zoning on the property, that in the future, whoever owns that 8.9-acre lot could be here doing the same presentation saying, well, one of the permitted uses is this, and then you would be in the similar situation of having to defend why you have a PD that says you can do something and not allow it in the future. So it seems like the best approach would be to do the general plan amendment and the zone change, focus this down into just a residential project, get rid of all the remaining commercial and recreational uses that are basically built into this project at this point, so that in the future it's very clear to everyone what's allowed and what's not allowed on the site.
Go ahead.
Yes, and I guess that's my question for you. Do you see a way that we could specifically limit some uses on that 8.9-acre parcel to be no objection, that gets to the intent that everyone is agreeing to?
I believe so, and I think the key thing is the open space easement and exactly how that's worded and the language. I guess the one question I've got with the open space easement is, who is going to actually own the easement? Is that something the city's going to own, or some other nonprofit, or what?
Typically, in other projects in the unincorporated area, the open space easement is an agreement between the property owner and the lead agency, which in this instance would be the city. However, the maintenance ownership still is retained by the owner, but he agrees with the city or the lead agency on restrictions, covenants to such property.
Okay. So the city would have to agree to change the easement. So.
Now, is that something that specifically, do we need to address the issue of like RV park or specific commercial uses or all commercial uses, or I'm not sure what is needed? And it seems like open space would preclude most anything that people would be concerned about.
Right, and I think the easement would specify what the restrictions are, and I'm sure we'd restrict it from any commercial use,
sure,
including an RV park and what have you.
So I guess that's the part that's not pinned down, of who's actually going to take care of this open space and any legal issues regarding liability, and I wasn't sure if I was clear on what your proposal was.
Well, and these are, I wouldn't say done all the time, but I've worked on multiple projects where open space easements are required as part of project implementation. Again, the open space easement is, the property is owned by the property owner, so the actual lot owner. So it would not be in fee to the city. It's owned by the property, but it's an agreement with the city where
recreation zone. So if they want to come in and do a miniature golf course or a tennis club or something, those would be allowable uses under the PD8. So that is the kind of issue you have just left over as a remnant if you don't go through and clean up the zoning.
1 acre, would a second unit be allowed?
Yes.
I think that's one thing that I would want not to see. Councilmember Burrow.
I have a couple questions. Now, you're talking about an open space easement. That wouldn't be over the entire parcel or just the floodplain, or what are you considering?
It would be how we were looking at proposing it is having building envelopes that would mimic the location of existing structure coverage, and then the open space easement would apply to all areas other than the building envelopes.
Okay. I understood the discussion of the general plan amendment, trying to avoid that process. But from what I understand from staff, we're going to probably have to address that if you're going to split the lot to allow two units. But we'll probably get to that a little bit later. I guess what my concern is, and this is for the city attorney, is if the open space easement is owned by the property owner, can the property owner at a future date decide not to have an open space easement on their property?
I think she said the open space easement would be owned by the city, and the property owner would be responsible for maintaining it. So the city would have to be the one.
Is that correct?
It's an agreement with the city. So the city is a holder of the easement, you know, meaning that they're a signee on the easement.
So it would take three votes of the council to overturn that?
Depending how we word the easement, yes.
Okay. So that's a concern of mine also.
Yeah. And okay. Can I talk?
Probably try to make the easement in perpetuity. So we'd probably make it so a council could not do that.
Right.
But that's something we'd have to address.
So it's something we have to consider. And the other part is, you know, PD8s get reused. So if we're going to allow all these different things to happen under a PD8, I think it's important for us to protect the city in the future if that gets reused for another site. Just comments, Warren?
Well, just to clarify, PD8 isn't a PD that we reuse. It's specific to this site and this site only.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
You wanted to say something, Jamie?
I just might add, in your deliberations, if you choose to take the route of the general plan amendment, and I think you'll hear this from the neighbors tonight, the neighbors are anxious to have something happen on the site. And so there's a timing issue with, as we know, general plan amendments, there's cycles. They only happen so many times a year. So if you do go that route, consider that in your deliberations, that we have some property owners that really want to see some action and get something happening out on the site. So timing is of issue to the neighborhood.
Councilmember Clay.
I'm certainly glad that you got an agreement with the neighbors. I think that's great. And as far as the open space easement goes, why, hopefully, again, country atmosphere, we're allowing 4-H and FFA projects or something that might graze the property down, like all the property around it, really. I mean, there's cattle all around it, but or horses or whatever, but if we can avoid a general plan amendment, I think that would be great if there's a way to do that. And I don't think anybody's going to, on a 1 acre.
On their own side, too.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie. With that, I'll open it up to the rest of the public, the neighborhood, or anyone else who wants to speak on it. If you would line up, we would assist. Or have you picked a spokesperson? Oh, terrific.
Thank you twice.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Luna, members of the council. I'm happy to be here. I pray that I can articulate the concerns of my neighbors and my friends, and that my comments are effective in helping you with your decision tonight. My name is Doug Pirto. I've lived in Atascadero since 1988, almost 20 years. I'm a professor and department head at Cal Poly. I live at 115 Eagle Creek Court. I'm representing the neighborhood. I got a ride from my neighbors tonight, and so if I want to ride home, I hope that I do a good job here for them and in their behalf. And I do hope that they will speak up and make additional comments if I've overlooked or forgotten to mention a couple of key points. We, as you know, have a number of concerns, and you heard us at the last study session. I think what griped us the most at that one is that there wasn't very much discussion with us at that time. Things were happening, the golf course was closing, we're hearing about soccer fields, this and that, and we're wondering about the impact on our property value. And now look what's happened. We've got a dead golf course, and our property values have decreased, and we're not getting timely action in relationship to our own views of what should be happening out there. The best thing that's ever happened, and I think the Lord has something to do with this, and I think your council has something to do with this, is saying, hey, why aren't you talking to the neighborhood a little bit more? And so Mr. Gearhart, bless his heart, he gave us those homes to begin with, and he has addressed us with a public meeting last week. And I think every one of my neighbors would say that we're very thankful for that collaboration, that discussion, and we're looking forward to future collaboration with Mr. Gearhart and his representative. I think it's Kirk Consulting. But we have these concerns, and they were heard, and we'll probably have additional concerns as we move forward here. But it was amazing how much consensus there was in our meeting the other night, and I'd like to share some of that with you. We had a great meeting. There are some basic principles that I'd like to say, and then I'll hit on those basic principles. We think economic viability is important here, and I've heard your council talk about commercial, and I heard you say that, Mr. Clay, and others on your council, that We need to think about this. And that first alternative that's being proposed, you don't see much restoration in there, because there isn't a lot of extra value that can be used to help us restore that landscape. And so the neighborhood picked up on that very quickly as we were listening to that, and we came up with some additional ideas. So economic viability must be a factor. Restoration and restoration of the natural landscape and a view of a holistic landscape, remembering that there are easement properties behind those houses that are already into the golf course. And if those are allowed to become junky, then the whole neighborhood becomes junky. Or if those areas aren't restored in some kind of consistent way across the entire landscape, our whole neighborhood suffers. So we need to think in a rather holistic view. We need to think about what the neighbors have to say, and we need to have the economic viability at the top of my list. And we definitely, I didn't hear anybody speak against the idea of two houses out there. There's already a building that looks like a house, for crying out loud. Let's go ahead and develop that. And it will be consistent with the other houses that are on that street. And I like Mr. Gearhart's proposal to take the old clubhouse and make that into a very nice home. So those two items go together. Item B, restoration, and we need a landscape plan. And I don't mean landscaping plan where we plant daffodils and roses. We're talking about this holistic view of how we're going to restore the landscape, native vegetation, and existing trees, and what we're going to do there. We need some kind of plan that we negotiate and discuss. And we got to remember, there's the land out in the middle there. There's that old pond that's there. And then we got these properties that have the easement, that have sand traps on them. They've got power lines in them. They've got other kinds of improvements. What happens to those things? And who's responsible for correcting those things or restoring those conditions? We would like to think that that would happen before the property is sold, and it'll be part of the restoration. So we've got to remember those different distinctions that are out there. Aesthetics has to be important, and I think the city, I think many of you said from Highway 101, this is a very important viewpoint of what people see when they come into our community. And we live there every day, and we don't like what we're seeing now, and it's certainly not a good statement for our community. And so the aesthetic aspects fitting into this holism and restoration has to be important to all of this. We do have a few carryover issues. I guess I should bring them up. Mr. Gearhart has promised us a little something when we first bought the houses there with reference to the entrance into our Eagle Creek residence. We'd like him to discuss that with us. Perhaps that could be part of the landscape plan. But that is not something that is a deal breaker here. We're just bringing it up here. And then we have that island in our main community, which has a native oak, a very stoic and very beautiful native oak, and we need to think about what we're going to do to protect it for the future that represents our little community. I guess I heard someone from my group say, you know, let's get this done. Let's get this over with. We've gone on long enough with this, and we've got an eyesore there that needs to be corrected. I can't tell you, the council, how to get this solved. Perhaps a general plan amendment is the right solution in the long term, but can't we do something in the short term to move this forward, to get the restoration work going, to get those two buildings built, and perhaps we go with an open space easement for the short term with a zoning change later. I just know that zoning changes take a while, and we may be sitting 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know. You'll have to tell me, but it could be a significant period of time, and we're not in favor of that. I do have signatures. I've counted at least 16, but then we circulated the list, and there's 20 on the list, so I don't know, but I do have those signatures that we do have here. There's at least 16 of us that agree with the comments that I think I've made tonight. I hope I've fairly represented them here. And with that, I'll say thank you for giving us this opportunity, number one, to come together, to collaborate, to talk to one another. Democracy in its best, I think. Number two, I want to thank the opponent there, but from our perspective, that's a mosquito trap at this point. It's not being maintained. It's an eyesore, and everybody at the public meeting the other night said, let's get rid of it. And it's a liability issue. And I guess I should have spoke to the fences. We do not like that liability fence that's been put up. We hope that that'll be part of the landscape restoration plan. It's how we'll deal with these easements, how we'll set off that area from the open space area as contrasted to the easement area in the back of those homes. And the existing white rail fence, which is part of what creates that country atmosphere, some of it is starting to deteriorate and fall down. And that's, I think, something that should be restored before the property is sold. And so some of those kinds of things. And there's bridges out there and sand traps. The recontouring of the landscape, yeah. We think those things should be done as part of the restoration and should be clearly specified and discussed with us as landowners.
I agree, and that's the proposal. Councilmember Clay.
Yes, you mentioned an oak tree. Is that a tree that's up above where
up
all
above,
the houses?
Yeah, up above.
So that doesn't really...
No, these are sort of things that we'd like Mr. Gearhart
right.
to just... He did promise us a gate at one time in the past, and that never came to be because there were some various issues over that.
Right.
We would like to discuss with them, get our neighborhood to... We probably even chip in. I haven't checked with the neighbors on this one. But I think we all would like to see a little bit happen up in our own neighborhood, up and around the 13 homes there. We've got a wonderful oak that represents the Toscadero in a way that I know all of you would like to see it sustained in the future, maybe a yeah. picnic table or two to enjoy that area.
And the lake, I'm sure that it's fed by the well, not by the creek.
I think that's right. I don't think the creek actually flows into that. But I'd have to ask Mr. Gearhart to verify that and his staff.
All right.
Councilwoman Barreau.
Thank you for having a representative. It's very, very nice. My question, was it ever considered, because, you know, as a council, we have to look at public benefit for a PD or for a planned development. Was it ever considered that the golf course become an open space or a common area for all people who live there to enjoy?
You know,
because a lot of communities, you know, my parents live in a community that part of that community is that they have an open space area with trails.
Well, that, you know, deal busters, we don't want to bust a deal here. But I think many of us, we can't walk on the Eagle Creek Ranch, which is behind us now because they've closed that road and we used to walk back there all the time. And those landowners back in that area, we have the best area we can walk now is back out on Santa Barbara Road. So this idea of having a little open space where we have access and can enjoy that landscape would, I think, have appeal to all of us. But there are liability issues on the person who buys that property. And so those would have to be addressed, and we don't want to bust a deal here. I'm sure we agree with you that those would be nice.
Yeah, because one of the thoughts that popped in my mind is, you know, a lot of planned developments do have common areas, and that could possibly be a common area. Do you currently collect homeowners' fees?
No, we're not. We're not a formal homeowners association, but we all accept those CC&Rs that were part of our original deeds. And I forgot to mention that. We do want to make sure that anybody buying those properties. Thank you very much. That fencing that's there now is part of that lower property, and we have no role in any
right,
of that.
It doesn't belong to anyone in particular.
We definitely have to look at it, and some of it is failing at this point, and I think it will eventually all fail, and it needs maintenance and restoration. And I think that needs to be part of this overall restoration plan.
Okay,
Mr. Gearhart has promised he would do something like that, develop a plan for us.
Because you were talking about a gate earlier. Usually if a community has a gate or a lot of the planned developments we've approved in the past usually do have some kind of dues for maintenance
I think
of common
that's why
areas.
We don't have
so
a
I'm
gate.
So I'm surprised you don't even have one.
I suspect that there was never really enough neighborhood momentum to get a gate because there were several landowners that didn't like the idea of homeowner fees.
Okay. Thank you for
that
background.
But I think we all agree that CC&Rs are important, and we do our best to adhere to them, and we try to talk to one another when we're thinking about doing something to our property.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, thank you for your thoughtful presentation. A month or so ago, we had a presentation on mosquito abatement, so I certainly understand the neighborhood's concern about that particular issue as far as filling in the lake. I wanted to ask you... on the issue of cleaning up the creek area, what are your concerns or what are the neighborhood concerns in that regard?
You know, I saw that too. I'm going to have to ask my neighbors. I suspect there's trash in that, and there may be some dead and dying vegetation in there that could help to enhance the quality of the view in that area. There's probably 1,242,000 golf balls that are still in that creek. I mean, there's just, I think it's mostly a debris and perhaps some sloughing that could be corrected. Again, that would have to be clearly outlined in the restoration plan within economic limits of what would be appropriate and what's legal in relationship to riparian zones.
Right.
Thank you.
Just want to mention that when this project was built, we had a huge rainstorm, and the developer, Killigarra, put out hay bales, and a lot of those hay bales ended up on Dove Creek, on the other side where the Dove Creek project is.
Yeah, that carries a lot of water. We get some pretty good ponding as a result of those creeks in that area. Yes.
Right. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Mr. Pareto.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else want to speak? Okay. It's wonderful that you brought a spokesperson. That's that really speeds things up. With that, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. I think one of the key issues is the general plan issue. What is the timeline if we try to do this right and did the subdivision?
As Ms. Kirk spoke, we do have timelines set in the general plan where we hear regularly scheduled land use amendments. Those are in September and March. If the council, though, were to authorize one of our reserved general plan amendment cycles for this, that we could then hear at any time, the general plan amendment would probably have a very small effect on the timeline. The main issue to process this will be to work out the master plan and this landscape restoration plan and put together the parcel map. The zone change and the general plan changes are actually fairly simple, just map changes that follow that process along. We're going to end up likely coming to both the Planning Commission and City Council, which is required of a general plan.
We could go forward with the restoration plan, the landscaping plan, and that by having a special general plan meeting, there would be no increased cost and no time delay to implement the plan that neighborhood might agree to as far as landscape restoration.
It won't increase the timeline if we're flexible on when we can hear it. In terms of the cost, the applicant's already submitted for the general plan amendment and the zone change 2 years ago, so he's already paid those fees.
So there would be no increased cost, and we could expedite the general planning
Correct.
Process. Okay. I'd like to hear from the applicant if the direction we're going is
Well, why don't we wait until we hear from the rest of the council?
Sure.
Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Yes, I just think it's imperative that we get this right. I just would hate to see the neighborhood have to endure another, you know, process, a governmental process, you know, a year or 2 years from now. So I think it's essential that we get it right.
Well, I think I've seen this project four or five times, and I don't want to see it again. So let's do it right. Councilmember Clay.
Yes. What would be the timelines, Warren? How many months are we talking about?
Well, we don't have an application, and everything we just talked about in terms of the landscape plan and the master plan sounds like that's going to take, you know, a couple months to get that worked out. Maybe they'll work faster, you know. So once they get that submitted into us, I'm guessing we're looking at 3 to 4 months to get that, the environmental done, get the staff reports done, then get to Planning Commission, and then on to City Council.
So 8 months, 9 months, a year?
No, I think you'd be looking at this fall.
And how many months are you? Give me a
few. I think we're 6 months from today.
That we completed?
Yeah, but remember, we don't have an application in terms of this master plan and all the things that the applicant and the public just spoke about. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of work. I'm thinking that's going to take them a couple months mm-hmm. to get all that worked out before they can even submit it to us so we could start, you know, doing our analysis of that.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Barreau.
My biggest concern before coming here tonight was the fact that we were losing a public benefit, and I see that the open space easement would be a public benefit, and I want to make sure that is done correctly. So I would be very interested in seeing what the restoration plan will be, and I'm really happy that the residents are also interested in returning it to a native state. We have a lot of regeneration problems with our oak trees, and that could be a great receiver site for oak trees. I think we should do it the right way. I don't want to take any shortcuts. I want to protect it for the people who live there. And also, it is a gateway to our community, and it deserves close attention to all the details. And I think that's all the comments.
Mayor Pro Tem, Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes, I do want to hear from the applicant to make sure this is viable. And I think I could support this if I've got a strong commitment from our fellow council members that we've come up with a lot of projects that we consider priorities that are coming back to us. But I hear us making a commitment to the neighbors that we're going to any more restrictions to them. I think, if anything, we should be rewarding folks for their cooperation, working together on a solution. But I don't want to take away any rights that they have compared to any other location in the city.
Well, this is a master plan of development, and it has to be consistent with the master plan of development, so you couldn't have a second unit at this point. Councilmember Barreau.
That was a concern I had as well, is that if it's a planned development, are they currently allowed, Warren, on the existing lots to have a second unit?
Yeah, on the second unit issue, the way we interpret it is if they're not shown on the master plan of development, you can't build a second unit. But each individual owner or the group could apply for an amendment to the master plan to allow second units. So they're not shown on the master plan, so they're not allowed now, but there's nothing preventing a master plan amendment from allowing second units throughout the project or on certain lots.
Okay, so as long as we're consistent throughout the development, I think that would be important for consistency, because that would affect the current owners. They wouldn't be allowed to have a second unit without an amendment, and if we allow the two new lots to allow to have a second unit, I think that would cause problems.
That would be an inconsistency. You can always apply for anything. Councilmember Clay.
Certainly we'd want to be inconsistent, but there's nothing wrong with second units. Granny needs a place, family members need a place, and let's not be bashing second units. They've been a great thing.
As long as it's consistent with the. Did you have a council member?
Well, I'm. I was
just still waiting for. Does this all sound like something you can live with? Or.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Jamie Kirk. Secondary units, that's not a sticking point that we want to get hung up on right now. Secondary units aren't allowed, so we're willing to live with a restriction on secondary units. Timing, general plan amendment, if we have a commitment from staff, it'll take us a month, probably a month and a half to work with the neighbors, get a landscape plan, preliminary grading plan prepared. So as long as we get a commitment from staff for timely processing and we're not held to that general plan amendment cycle of those two cycles, if we can use that flexible date, I think that we can agree to that and do it the way that staff and the council would like to do it. The one thing that we would like to request from a timing standpoint is an allowance, some direction given to staff to allow us, as we're going through, once we get consensus from staff on the master plan of development and the restoration plan, if we can submit submit a building permit for the grading plan to get that in plan check, so hopefully we'll get this approved in September and be able to do the grading during the dry year. We'd like to do that, not go into the rainy year, because then guess what? We're waiting until next April, so we'd like to have you consider that in your deliberation also.
Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Okay. I think do we have consensus to...
So that direction, staff...
Is that enough direction?
And I did hear consensus on the part...
On expediting this, and...
Yes.
I don't know about I think the grading permit, is that a big deal, or...
No, we can run a concurrent process. We wouldn't issue the permits until it was approved by the council, but that does speed the process up. So it sounds like my understanding is we don't want to see any second units. We will do the general plan and the zoning map changes. And
that there's going to need to be an arborist report with any restoration plan?
Yeah, we do have some oak trees, so we'll do some arborist tree work as part of this. We're not going to issue the grading permit until it's approved by the council. What we're going to do is we'll plan check it concurrently with the hearing process so that basically as soon as you approve it, we would be in the position to issue permits so that he could start construction. So there wouldn't be that delay where they had to wait before they could submit.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I don't think you need a motion on this, right?
No. We got consensus. Yeah.
We have adequate direction.
Okay, great. With that, we'll take a 5-minute break.
Thank God.
Question of Commissioner Norms. City Attorney Pat Enright.
Thank you, Mayor Luna. This item is the adoption or the consideration of adoption of Commissioner Norms for the Planning and Park and Rec Commission. The council on December 12th at its meeting considered draft council norms and directed staff to make corrections to the norm and receive input from city staff on the norms and forward the norms to each of the commissions for their review and comment. This was done and we received comments from both the Planning Commission and the Parks and Rec Commission on the norms. Each commission made changes to the draft norms and they are set forth in a compare-write version which is attached to the report. We also received some comments from staff members, some of which were included and some were not included in the draft norms, and we've attached a draft of those comments to the report as well. It's in the council's discretion as to what revisions they desire to make to the draft norms for each commission. And with that, I would just conclude and say it's the recommendation is that the council adopt the proposed changes to the norms as may be amended by the council.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes, I just have a couple of slight suggested modifications to consider. First, looking at page 101, the word influence was crossed out and the word lobby was substituted. To me, influence is a broader, more general term, and I think the intention of that word. Could you give me any feedback in terms of why that was changed, and could you tell us if that's true, that influence would be a stronger, broader term to use than lobby, which seems narrower?
I was not at the actual commission meeting when they changed that wording, so I'm not quite sure what the thinking of the commissioners were. I do think lobbying is more of a legal term, so in that sense maybe influence is a better term in that it's broader, but yeah, it's certainly up to the council. So.
My recommendation
I think
would
they're both trying to get at the same time.
I think it's good that commissioners visit sites. I always tried to, but I think it's also good to report that you visit a site along with any. If it's required that ex parte contacts are reported, I think it's helpful to say that as well.
I agree. Quasi-judicial matters require ex parte.
So would you say visits a site or has an ex parte contact?
I would just take out the strikeout.
Take out the strikeout.
Both.
It'd
be
leave
visits
it there.
A site,
okay.
Has ex parte contact, or receives information.
Okay, sounds good.
Report it.
Gotcha.
And my last is a concurrence.
Keep
okay.
I think
last
we're
suggestion.
Okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is towards the bottom under the new number 16, it talks about practice active listening. And maybe I've just worked at mental health for too many years. Active listening is a particular form of dialogue that's often used. And I think I asked staff if they had a different choice of words that might get at the intent maybe a little more. Do you have any suggestions on that, of following up on my question on that, our city manager?
Well, just listening is pretty good.
I think that's what we would suggest.
Yeah, I think listening, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. And I don't think you need to practice it. I think you just need to do it.
Yeah.
So what are we changing it to? Just say active listening? That's kind of just two words.
Listening.
Instead of saying practice active listening, I think we just want to say just listen to all others' input.
I'm okay with practice active listening. I think that's pretty direct in saying that we need to be attentive.
I agree with
Tom. I hear you saying.
Well, I'm okay with the first wording, but the other wording sounds kind of soft to me. So say it again what you want, Tom.
How about attentive listening?
I think George had it.
Listen to the public and fellow council people.
Commissioners.
Listen to commissioner, right.
Fully listen to
no
public.
Listen attentively.
How about listen to speakers and commissioners?
Fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
How about listen attentively to the public and fellow commissioners?
We don't any need, adjective
we don't
might
need
actually take away from it. I think we've
devalued words by adding to them.
I like what Pat said.
So we don't want it tentatively. Okay.
So I concur with what you described.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Just take out the tentatively.
Okay.
Is that it?
Anyone else? Councilmember Vero.
I was looking at some of the staff suggestions on page 107. I do see a value that a member of the public can ask the commission to agendize an item for discussion. So I'm in favor of adding that, but should we say that's within their jurisdiction? Would that make it more clear? Mr. Enright, do you have a comment on that?
It'd be in the jurisdiction of each of the commissions.
Right. Like they wouldn't bring up a...
Not a member of the public.
So everything's council-driven.
Right.
Okay. Items 15, I'm comfortable with those. Commissioners will treat staff in all matters the way they would want to be treated if similarly situated. So again, getting the idea that, you know, look at things from a different perspective. And I think the second bullet is a better version of making sure that that we get all the facts before we start speaking out. So I'm in favor of including those two. I guess it's under number 15.
Well, I'd be concerned of limiting conversation. I think there's a consequence if you speak before you have all of the facts, and there's a natural consequence of doing that. I don't know how you could give direction on that. People may have a different opinion of to what degree they've done that. So I'm not sure if that adds value or not.
Well, the part that adds value to me is that I think it's important that if you're going to speak as a representative of the city or as someone that people look up to, you really should take the time to gather the facts and speak with, you know, our city staff to make sure that you're saying something that's informed and not something that is reactionary or something that you're going to regret later. I think things have been said in the past that the city probably has regretted, made us look really kind of foolish.
Like what? Don't make those statements unless you know what.
I don't want to go there, but I'm just saying I think it would be good to encourage people to think before they speak to the press regarding city matters. Because it's not just about them. It's about the city and our image as a city. So that's why I want to include that.
Well, the council has a norm that talks about when we present ourselves before other bodies that we are very careful about when it's our personal opinion or when it's a council opinion.
Sure.
Well, I think in reading that, the way this is worded, I think it is well worded. I would like to ask the city attorney's opinion on that. I think I agree with the intention that you might offer. If someone wants to offer an opinion, I think that's fine. You state it's an opinion. But I think if you're going to state something, making a pronouncement, finding condemnation, or take proactive action, as it says here, or in any way legitimize unverified without first seeking to learn all the facts.
Yeah,
I can live with that.
I got a problem with that because facts are facts. I mean, your facts might be my facts. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm just wondering, does the city attorney see any specific problems with this, or why were you thinking this should not be included?
Well, my concern is I would not want to have this read or interpreted in such a way that someone is prohibited from talking to the press or to other people. So
there are some free speech issues that I don't know that, you know, I think it's a good guideline, and it seems like norms fall under the guideline. It's not like you're telling folks they can't say something.
We could add whenever possible.
I think
it's just good. You know, norms are
some things.
How about we change both wills to shoulds? Does that make you more comfortable?
Does the city attorney feel more comfortable with that?
More wiggle room.
I, I got a real problem with the word facts, because you can eliminate facts, you can, take the facts that you think are important. It's ridiculous.
How about if we change it without first seeking relevant facts? Because I don't know how you'd say, well, I'm going to seek to learn all the facts. If we wait to make a decision till we learn all of the facts.
Oh, cripes. Why we got that in there in the first place?
Relevance, okay with me.
So I think that's, I think, as you say, it's a good point just to have folks think about this. Mm-hmm. And it's
just
listed.
Just so they know that it may come up, because especially when you're new on doing something, someone, the newspaper may call you up, and, if you haven't
think
reviewed
twice.
Your council norms, yeah, exactly. Think twice about what you say.
So will to should, and more generalized on, broader on the facts.
You shouldn't make public promises anyway.
I know, but these are just norms. They're not, you don't sign your life away, I don't think, you accept those.
Sometimes I feel like I did.
Facts are subjective.
So are we comfortable with those changes?
I'm not.
So I'm not either. So Mayor Pro Tem Brenner, we'll hear from you.
The bottom line is the words on these papers are only as good as the strength of our character and convictions. But that aside, number one, I really have a problem with this.
You want to decide this issue?
Let's sign up. Where do you weigh in on these, on 107's suggestions?
Page 107, number 15.
That Mr. O'Malley and myself have been discussing.
Second bullet. We have two in agreement on it. We're looking for a third.
I just think it opens doors that could cause us problems.
Thank you. Now, did you have some other concerns?
So, Councilman Bureau, any more?
Well, maybe before we left that, there any?
We've left it, Tom.
We won't be revisiting this for a while. Is there anything that's a reduced subset of that you would be comfortable with, just to kind of get this as a topic in people's minds that are reviewing this? I think that was all Commissioner or Councilmember Barrero was trying to do. And I agree, more general is fine. Because I think it's a good point. We're saying you might have new folks coming on. That's when it's especially valuable to just, it's a little heads-up reminder to, we've all been pushed when the heat's on by media for a quote or something. And a good reminder.
So we make a quote.
Sometimes we have to.
Well, certainly we have to be cautious.
We have
to.
Maybe that's the word.
But it's freedom of speech.
Be cautious.
Discreet conduct, if you can wordsmith that, and I'd be fine with that.
It's okay.
We need to leave it alone.
So, Mike, I guess you're the deal breaker here. So, are you interested in making some changes, or?
Commission.
Silly.
With quotes by?
With, pronouncements by city council members. Well, we're going to remove that person from his position. And I don't want to start getting into specifics. But I'm just saying that we need to make sure that we're coming across correctly. Because we're supposed to be a semi-unified voice. We're allowed to have opinions. But when we start going beyond our jurisdiction, like affecting staff, this is a staff suggestion. I just think this is a good word of caution to the people who are representing our city. I don't think it's draconian. Mm-hmm. I think this is it's just a reminder.
And I do believe that we, like it or not, we give up some rights being in the positions that we are. We don't just speak for ourselves, and there's an interpretation that we are speaking broader, even if we don't intend to. So mm-hmm. I think at least it's a good reminder for us, as the city manager used to say when I first got elected, be careful, Tom, don't say you like blue streets because staff might go out and start painting them blue. I mean, there's an influence that people may not realize that they have.
Oh, I got my number up, George.
Councilmember Clay.
I can't recall anybody saying that a staff member should be removed. You need to be specific. You're all over the place with this, and I don't agree with you.
Okay, one of our norms is respect differences.
Well, I do. But she's got to state if she's going to make those statements.
City attorney.
Well, I just got a suggestion. These norms aren't written in stone. And I see in number 15, we've got commissioner relations with city staff. 16 is commissioner's conduct during public meetings. Maybe in the future we can look at adding one where commissioner conduct with the public outside of meetings or something like that. And sounds then we can good. Take a look at the similar the way we've got 15 and 16 set up with like bullet points.
Yeah, there's nothing to stop us from adding to these norms.
And I think
if somebody has a bright idea.
So you're saying we should make a new subheading, like a number
17 and whatever.
Number 17? Well, I'd be in favor of that.
Except I don't have the bullet points here right now, but that's what I'd suggest.
Well, let's continue the item then.
Yeah, let's continue the item.
I'm all for that. I'm all for that.
Okay.
Yeah, let's continue it.
Let's continue the item.
I think,
do you have enough direction where we're going?
I think I know where
okay.
each of you are going, yeah.
Okay.
Or thinking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mayor Pro Tem Brenler didn't get a chance to give some direction.
Well, yeah.
Let's see what,
and it's,
see what you got.
It can be rather brief, but number on number one, I've read it, I've reread it, and it's convoluted. When we disagree, we do it without being disagreeable. And I think I understand what the intent is, and I would offer that we simply say we will be we will behave professionally with respect to one another's right to hold and voice differing positions or opinions. Is that reasonable?
I don't have a problem with that.
And then in regard to number six,
did you get that?
Why don't we move that under Commissioner? Can you repeat how you wanted to word that, Mike?
We will behave professionally and respect one another's right to hold and voice differing positions or opinions.
That's well worded.
That's fine.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's one. Okay.
And then number six that deals with the issue of blindside. I have problems with that word.
Blindside.
And what I would propose is commissioners and staff should be courteous and not take actions intended to catch an individual uninformed.
I wonder if there's a way to say blindside with more words, but less words than what you said.
I guess I have.
How about surprise?
I like surprise.
I was thinking surprise also.
That will work.
Okay.
That would be fine.
That's fine. Fine with me.
And then there was one other issue. It was raised during strategic planning. It dealt with the issue of a commissioner, and I guess this would apply to a council member as well. But if you are an official complainant on a code violation, that is likely or possibly to come to your jurisdiction, that you're not subject to the same confidentiality guidelines given the general public. Now, perhaps that should be more an issue of policy.
Well, I agree with the concept in that, yeah, I agree it should be a policy, too. But any suggestions?
Yeah, I believe that's policy, and I believe at the strategic planning I stated that I would come back with options for the council.
Okay.
So perfect. I'll work on those options.
That's fine. Thank you.
George?
Yeah,
Councilmember Clay. On this thing about conduct on 16, there could be something, below I ask for clarification in regards to how a commissioner or council member, acts in the public, something to the fact that they should recognize their position, that they act professionally or whatever the word would be in the public. I'm not against that, but all this fact stuff and everything, that you understand where I'm coming from?
No.
Okay, well, I guess I'll never be able to explain it, so we'll just drop it.
Are you suggesting any changes to that sentence?
No, not to that sentence, okay. But that, you know, something in this commissioner's conduct during public meetings and then something in the public, you know, or outside the public meeting, that you act in a professional way or something like that. Conduct yourself.
Well, I think one plus about bringing this back is if you want to wordsmith that
all right,
we'll have a chance to add.
Okay.
No, but I agree with the concept that we should all act professionally, including the staff. Well,
especially staff.
Well, we kind of added that in under Mr. Brindler's change, I think. Or did we? Because you added the word professional.
But we didn't mention in the community, you know.
Sure.
So I don't care how it's done, but something like that I'm okay with.
Well, let's do this. So if anybody has input, they should give it to the city attorney.
Fine.
Draft something up and bring it back to us on a future.
Look at some of them, but many times people are not being attentive to the speaker. They're doing other things. And the intent there was to... The intent was to practice, at least look like you're listening, even if you're not. That, and because there's too many times that you go to meetings and people are off doing something else, and you know as a speaker that exactly, there you go. And that was the intent of it.
I think the problem is active listening in the jargon of the social psychology world has a specific kind of meaning.
Never went there.
Yeah. Well,
thank you.
I had children. We did a lot of. I had a child. Or my wife and I had a child, and we practiced lots of active listening. Yeah. But I think there actually is some legal language here because there was a court case in Los Angeles where people were up and
yes.
answering their cell phones, and I think maybe there's some language there that we could use.
Yeah, and, maybe I could look at the court case and see what language the court used.
But, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sandy. Okay, with that, we'll move on to the next item, which is the adoption of the general plan amendment policy. That's another one for the city attorney.
Yes, this is... One more, and I actually do have four slides on this one. But
excuse me, Mr. Enright. Did you make copies of what you had emailed us? Because
yes,
I didn't make a copy thinking you were going to give me one when we got here.
Yeah, you said you promised us each a copy.
Yeah. So if you have that and could pass it out, that would be wonderful before you start.
Yeah, I didn't print it out because he said it.
Thank you. This item is to consider the adoption of a general plan amendment policy for the city. And this is through the city's general plan, which was originally adopted in 2002, was updated in June of 2004. As we know, the general plan is the blueprint for all development in the city. It's basically the constitution for all land use development throughout the city, and all planning activities must conform to the general plan, whether it be zoning, that includes conditional use permits and variances, subdivisions, or redevelopment projects. The general plan, as indicated in the general plan, may be amended from time to time by the city council. They are to be initiated in a manner specified by the council, a general plan amendment. And what we're attempting to do tonight is to put into writing what the City Council's policy is to initiate a general plan amendment. The general plan itself does provide, in part, a amendment process as to what is required for the general plan amendment. However, the city, in addition to what's in the general plan policy, has historically have input into any text amendments before they're actually processed. It would also require the applicant to enter into a reimbursement agreement or advancement of funds agreement so that the city is fully reimbursed for any costs of the general plan application. And lastly, it would give the city council, which they've done in the past, the power to either direct staff to process the application with the council's comments or to deny processing the application. Now, that's the intent of the general plan policy that we originally drafted, and we have made a few changes to that general plan policy, and I just want to go through those real quick with the council. As I stated, the goal is that the policy is implementing what the council has been doing in the past, so it is not to change what has been the unwritten policy of the city in processing major general plan amendments. On page 116 in your book, under number 5, we changed that to include the general plan amendment review processing. We deleted the pre-application review process because that's already on page 114 as to how that would be handled under the major land use developments in section 3. So we deleted that section totally, and we made it that the council may require either the neighborhood meetings or the study session, and it would be in the discretion of the council if they wanted to do that. And that would be after the council directed the processing of the application.
Excuse me. Could you show me where you struck the pre-application review process, because you said that's already –
It's on the bottom of page 114.
No, it's 116.
Well, that's the trouble. It's in our staff report, in our binders, it's on page 116. The handout you gave us tonight has that section crossed out, and I understood you to say that you crossed it out because it's already listed somewhere else.
It's already on section 3.
Section 3.
A. It says the applications for major amendments to the general plan will be accepted by the Director of Community Development upon the initial review of the application and determination being made by the director that the general plan is a major amendment. He shall then prepare a staff report to the council within 90 days.
That seems to me this is different, though, because we're saying we could require a pre-application review process. Seems to me that's different than on 114, what's listed on 116.
Well,
and I think it's valuable, so I'm trying to understand how you think that's the same.
Well, 116 is in more detail, or was originally 116 is in more detail.
Yeah.
And if you want, we could put that into 3A. But we didn't see any point in twice having the application be in process. So.
Well, maybe Warren could help on this. It seems like it's valuable to have the...
Do that regardless on all projects, so it's probably not necessary to put it in here.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Okay. And then the other major change was the original Section 6, which dealt with staff review. We've deleted that because staff would review it in accordance with their policies, and we didn't feel it necessary to state that again. And with that, I'm prepared to take any questions.
Thank you, Pat. Any council questions? Seeing none, Council Member Clay?
Yeah. Well, my concern is that we're making this decision here. You know, it comes to us and we're making a decision without all the facts or the input to allow a general plan amendment to go forward.
Well, that would occur when we actually have a general plan amendment submitted by someone. The point of this policy is to put in writing exactly what the policy is so that all applicants are treated equally or feel they're being treated equally, okay, and they're on notice as to what the policy is of the
city
council.
My question is, on the general plan amendment to go forward, they got to come to the council. How big of a hearing are they going to have? Is it going to be a similar hearing to what they would have if the actual general plan amendment was on the agenda and going through, or what what's going on. I mean, are we going to have all the facts, or are we going to be just be making a decision not to go forward or to go forward without the total facts or process?
Well, I think that would be up to the council on each project, and I would hope that you would have the facts. You'd have basically a work study as to what the project is, and that's what we've done on similar projects like West Front and...
Right, but then if we say to go forward, is that actually stating to them that that the vote is going to be positive?
No, there'd be no guarantee. Just like now when we've done it, there's been no guarantee that when the actual project gets both to the Planning Commission and the City Council as to what the vote would be.
I understand, but would that give them a false impression that it looks like their project would go forward? I guess then my other question is on the half acre, how do we come to the half acre? Why not an acre?
It's what it is now.
Well, I know. I just, is a half acre appropriate, or would it be?
That's been kind of a ballpark rule that staff's used. We haven't had any projects that really are a half acre. Yeah. We had a number of real small projects that were like 6,000 square foot and 10,000 square foot where we just had to make some minor amendments. Those weren't brought forward to the council. Pretty much everything else was in the one plus acre. So it did seem like half acre was probably a good boundary in terms of major and minor.
So you're comfortable with that then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
We're already putting this policy to practice, correct?
Yes.
And this is just a matter, so we can all appreciate the necessity of putting things into writing in this
correct.
Day and age.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mayor, Councilmember Burrow.
I understand how you wanted to streamline it by not repeating things, but is this a document that we're going to be giving to people that want to do a general plan amendment? I wasn't sure if it would be beneficial to, even though it's a repetition maybe, to include some of the...
Yeah, we would explain what that part of the process is. We do have some other information that outlines that process.
So you have that in a written form also?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that this was a good document that people would be able to understand. Okay.
Councilmember O'Malley.
You may have answered my question, but I think you bring up a very good point, and I just want it to be a level playing field. There are some folks who do things like this more often, but there's some folks that this is once in a lifetime, and they may not know to ask that they could have a extra meeting with you to sit down and explain things. And you know, I kind of like that it is written out somewhere, that if someone was applying to do anything like this, and there are some practices that you offer that are not part of the policy and procedure, you say that you have something in writing you would give someone. I kind of like to understand how that happens, because I would want a new applicant to make sure they had the same access to staff and information that anybody else would. That's part of why we're trying to reduce this to writing.
For each of the applications, there's a process and a checklist that you can just pick up at the front counter. You can also meet with a planner, and they'll walk you through it. It lays out all the submittal steps and the process that, whether it's a parcel map or a general plan amendment, what would be required. But we don't have anything currently that talks about that pre-authorization process and the special meetings that might be triggered by a general plan amendment. So this would basically be supplemental information. If the Section 5A that's been noted as deleted, if the council wants to keep that section, I don't really see a problem with that. You probably want to insert that and make that the new Section 3A, and then make 3A would become 3B, I would imagine.
Well, I kind of agree with Councilman Bayrou that I just want to make sure everyone has equal access to information, and I'm comfortable if it's on a checklist that it's clear that someone applying for something knows that they can have a pre-hearing. That's something in case they don't know to ask for that. Yeah, that's fine with me as long as it's clear to anyone applying for anything, not only just a general plan amendment. That sounds like the checklist. I need to take a look at that at the front counter again. Maybe that's doing the job.
Well, and the checklist doesn't really talk about the informal pre-application process. It talks about, you know, how to apply and then all the steps. So there isn't probably something that just says, you know, come in and talk to us early.
Maybe there's a way to work that in, because, again, I'm sure from your perspective this is pretty simple, straightforward, but I get a lot of constituent questions from folks that are just trying to figure it all out. And if we can kind of get some of those baby steps for folks, if there's a way to do that, I would support that.
So do we want to make it 3A, and then we'll move 3A to 3B?
That's what I was going to suggest.
I like the idea of that.
That's fine.
Of the review.
Yeah, there's redundancy can be very helpful sometimes.
Okay.
Councilmember Clay?
Well, I like the idea of the review with staff.
Okay.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Let's see, a motion by Councilmember Barreau. Do I have a second? Oh, okay. Mayor Pro Tem Brenler seconded it. Discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Barreau?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes, and I am concerned that we get all the information before we make the decision. I think that's very important.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is committee reports. I'm up first. No reports. Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
No report.
Councilmember Barreau?
No report.
Councilmember Clay?
No report.
Councilmember O'Malley?
No report.
Oh, terrific. Individual determination and or action. Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Yes. Our creek setback issue is going to come before us May 8th?
Yes, sir.
All right. Then I would hope that perhaps we would give some consideration for 3 minutes as opposed to five, because I anticipate that we would have a pretty large group of people to speak. And it would be considerate for the people at the end of the line to have opportunity.
I could support that. And
can we do it, though? I thought we were...
Well, I'm opposed to reducing public comment, especially on controversial items. And
I would rather request of the public not to be redundant and, you know, and that
give
type of thing.
Direction.
And it's going to be a long meeting and, you know, so on.
My suggestion was based simply on those people at the end of the line. If they're going to be here for 3 hours, that certainly isn't very fair to them. Pro or con.
Can we do this?
No, we can't do that.
Okay.
I think the only time we've done it in the past is with a unanimous council. So.
Okay.
It's mute then. I did have another issue.
Okay.
I just wanted to reaffirm my support for an employee satisfaction survey, and I understand that we are going to be moving forward on that.
I support that.
I support it as well.
We have it on our future issues list. As you mentioned earlier this evening, you guys have stacked quite a few issues. We do not have it programmed, but it is on our council list.
Okay. Councilmember Burrow, anything else? Mike? Councilmember Burrow?
Just because we did pass this GPA policy. So next time Walmart and Rotman come in, because we already had this workshop, will they have to have another workshop before it comes to us for consideration?
Yes. Because it'll be a new application. They've withdrawn their application. There is no application in. So any new application that's submitted starts the process from the beginning again. So the first step will be to come to the council for authorization to proceed.
So when they come for a workshop, will it just be their application, or do they have the option of doing their application in conjunction with the property across the street?
It's likely, well, it depends. If it's submitted as a single application, then it will be processed or brought forward as a single application. That's not the workshop that's described in here. The workshop would be something that the council would tell us to do later while we were processing it. This is just the first step, which is...
The item, you want to fill in the council on what item we're talking about?
The other item is the zone change conditional use permit and precise plan for the hotel and office building next to the post office, the J.P. Patel's Hotel. It followed the creek setback issue at the Planning Commission, so it was never heard and was continued. So we have actually scheduled it ahead of the creek setback issue on this meeting so it gets heard. Otherwise, if it misses the May 8th meeting, we're not seeing that project until summer.
So my suggestion is that we start early enough so we consider that item, go into redevelopment as we usually do, and then at 7 o'clock discuss the creeks.
That's fine with me. That's fine with me. Right.
Yeah. It's May 8th, yeah.
Can we ask the city attorney, can we do that with notice?
Sure. With notice, we can start it early.
We'll okay. Then I'm okay with that.
In fact, we could have a special meeting and do it that way.
Yeah, I think let me just clarify, because that is a zone change. So I'm not sure that it can be done at a special meeting.
A zone change would take a regular meeting. So yeah.
Well, that'll be a regular meeting. If we schedule it early, it's not a special meeting.
Well, I just want to make sure that what the answer is.
Well, how about we'll check on it.
Okay, good idea.
But that's the concern. It's got to be at a regular meeting for a zone change.
Well, it's a regular meeting, and we started at 6 today.
We started, for the closed session items. Yeah.
What's the estimate on this time?
We haven't had the Planning Commission hearing, so we don't know if there's any controversial neighborhood issues. We're not expecting any, but it is a fairly complex project. It is your first four-story hotel in town, so I would expect it takes you a little bit of time to get through it.
Well,
why don't we push the creek issue to a next meeting?
To May 8th?
No. Keep Patel's on there and then put the ordinance to the next meeting.
You're going to be gone.
So then we bump a bunch of others. We got the budget coming up.
The May 22nd meeting is the meeting we're going to cancel so that we can work on our number one priority, economic development. Council members are going to attend the International Shopping Centers Convention. So that May 22nd meeting won't occur. The June 13th meeting would be the next one, and that would be the budget hearing. And we have, as a backup budget hearing, the June 26th meeting. If you don't get done on June 13th from the budget, we would have another opportunity for hearing on June 26th. So there's potentially time on June 26th if we're able to wrap up. Most of the time we've wrapped up the budget.
Well, I would support that hearing, because I think the majority of folks that have spoken about the creek issue have got some concerns about it. And it's not like people saying, please do it, change the general plan quicker. You know, so I think putting that off, and if we're going to be consistent, we're saying, I'm not sure we need to do budget hearings if we don't get a motel built and go to the convention about learning how we can attract some better businesses at shopping centers. I mean, that we're keeping with our council priorities, number one. I think we need to bump that creek.
That the hotel is something we want to consider as quickly as possible, so May 8th. Early if possible. If not, then I hate to see us bump the creek, because then everything backs up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm concerned that we have
to do the hotel.
Yeah, but we haven't gotten through the Planning Commission, and if the Planning Commission gets bogged down, we won't be seeing it anyway. And I know there's some real time constraints on the hotel potentially losing that. And that's an income stream. I don't know if there's a way we can help the Planning Commission, at least on their schedule, we can help to make sure it doesn't get bumped again and gets heard. Is it first on their agenda this next time?
It will be heard.
Okay. Okay, Councilmember Clay.
Warren, in regards to Ellen's comment about the Rotman Group and Walmart, are you saying that we could have another, like, May 30th meeting where they brought their project forward as a study session, both of them together, so to speak? Is that what you were indicating?
Well, it wouldn't be a study session, but whatever they submit, mm-hmm. we're going to package it up, bring it to the city council, ask the city council, should staff begin the process of processing that project through? So that'll be the decision point of the council as to whether or not you want to see staff investing time in moving that project forward. We will notice that as a public meeting, so I'm sure it will be well attended.
Okay. So then at that time they can show their proposal, put their best foot forward, do whatever it takes to inform the public and the council on the direction they're going.
Yeah, they'll be given ample opportunity to present the project in their best light possible, and then we'll give the public their opportunity to ask questions.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
But we don't have anything at this point. Councilmember Burrow, did you? Okay. Well, that will adjourn. Oh, I'm sorry. City clerk.
No report.
City treasurer, city attorney. City manager.
The attendance report was circulated to you, and I think I've already made all my other reports.
Oh, great. But that will adjourn.